This is how you start rumors.
It's how rumors get started. Started by the jealous people who...
What's that from?
That's from the song Rumors.
I know the album Rumors.
I know the album Rumors. I don't know the song. You just made up a song?
No, I didn't make up a song. Talk about the boy named Michael. Some say he might be gay. I try to argue, but they say if he wasn't, he wouldn't walk that way.
Is that from the Rent?
Yeah, it's from the song. It's from Rent.
Okay. Oh, I don't know Rent.
No, it's not from Rent. From Rent. Jesus Christ. Now, this is a story all about how Robin Bouger is here. Hi, Robin. How are you?
Hi.
Yay.
I'm pretty good. Thanks for coming across the hall and finding me.
Oh, excellent. Let me introduce myself to you. We've never met before, right?
Never.
No, okay. All right. First of all, pick this card.
Okay.
It's the Ace of Spades.
It is.
Done. Hooray. Whoa. Hi, anyway, I'm Ian Boothby, and this is...
And that was our Lemmy tribute. I'm David Dedrick.
Yeah. There was a lot of tributes. It was a Fresh Prince tribute. It was a tribute to The Art of Magic.
Yes.
It was a tribute to Lemmy. We're all over the map. Everything's great. Robin doesn't know what kind of show this is, so he's just right now starting to regret that he said yes to being on it.
Oh, God.
And I'm sorry, I went completely backwards. I should have introduced us and then brought you in. Okay, Robin, you tell me if this introduction is terrible or not. Robin Bouger is a cartoonist. Correct. That's how I originally knew you, but probably best known for his work on a book called Cinema Sewer, which has been around, is it been 20 years now?
It's coming up on its 20th year.
And why don't you tell the folks what the book is about?
Well, it started out as a zine, like a self-published movie zine. So it's basically me writing about my favorite cult films, drive-in movies, classic porn, old exploitation films, horror movies. They're like genre film, basically.
Right.
And so I do it kind of in a zine-y style. So it's all hand-lettered, and I do little illustrations. And basically, when I started it, I had this idea that not a lot of people had been using the aesthetic of comics to talk about movies. And I thought that would be really cool because they're both visual mediums.
Mm-hmm.
So then it as it went along, I got a publishing deal through Fab Press in the UK for book collections, softcover book collections. And so over the years, I've been, now there's five of those out.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what are we up to now? We're up to five?
Yeah, volume five.
Okay.
I'm working on volume six. And I'm also kind of nearing up on the 30th issue of the magazine itself.
Very cool. Okay. And the thing that, well, it's a very good, it was good zines, good books. One of the things that just technically amazes me is that you hand letter the whole thing. Your hand lettering is beautiful. It's just, it's very appealing, very easy to read. And it just makes my wrist hurt looking at it that you do all this, this work.
Yeah. I actually have kind of developed problems in my right arm from all the masturbate. No, wait, of all of the hand lettering. And
the master lettering.
And the master
lettering. Yeah, well, one helps the other, right? One trains for the other.
Yeah.
That's how they say.
Yeah.
Take a break, do that, and help letter a while.
Wait, take a break, masturbate. Yeah.
Well, they say that to teenagers. Letter a whole comic,
in between,
and that way you'll,
well, that's what they always told me. Don't hand letter so much, you'll grow hairy palms. And so, but I didn't listen. I just did all the hand lettering. And that
advice came from the reviewer, Harry Palms. I'm thinking of Harry Knowles. I'm sorry. I always confuse those two completely.
You know, it's easy to do.
He's still around, right?
He's around, yeah.
Yeah, is he still, I don't want to be mean, is he still relevant? Is he still a thing?
I never really followed him, so he's outside of my frame of reference. But okay. I have noticed that he's
But around. I thought you liked movies.
Yeah, except...
except for, like,
you're
except
right.
For his movies.
What a fraud.
Except for the movies he writes about, I don't like them.
It felt to me like he used to be, we had a fellow on the show, a friend of the show, Patrick Soriel,
yes.
who used to have a movie review site, was kind of a rival site to Harry Knowles' mm-hmm. site, and Harry's been very, very popular. And it feels to me now when I look at, whenever I see references to Harry, I go like, kind of, Kevin Smith kind of took over everything that you'd be seeing Harry Knowles do.
Yeah,
you know, if you're going to see that kind of thing, you're probably going to see it over, Kevin Smith's going to be hosting the thing. You wouldn't ask the Harry Knowles to do it, but I'm sure he's still around. One time, I remember he was on Roger Ebert's show. He was the co-host.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Was he really?
Yeah,
he
for one episode. Yeah. And went, okay. Oh, good for him. And he brought up all his obscure movies and Roger went, eh. Okay, yeah, sure. Killer Clowns from Outer Space, whatever you say, brother.
Right.
And there you go. I'm missing Gene. He's thinking in his head, and the show went along.
He did miss Gene.
Yes.
The show was never as good as it was with the two of them. They were like, that chemistry was undeniable. It's too bad.
Well, let's go to the topic.
They were the Bert and Ernie.
Right. And speaking of movies, so when did you sort of, I assume you like movies. You're not just doing this out of spite.
Yeah. Generally, I hate them. Okay. No, I find time to like them once in a while.
Okay. Yeah. So where did you start liking movies? What was what were the movies that kind of got you when you were a young fellow, younger fellow?
I can trace it back to certain things. And I have written about this in Cinema Sewer, like way back elementary school, you know, I'm like, oh, all I really care about is, you know, Muppets and cartoons, and then you see something. There's kind of like your gateway drug
that yeah.
gets you into genre film. And I think for me, it was actually an episode of Miami Vice.
Okay.
And I kind of, I'm like, ooh, this is like, it was involved a teenage hooker, and she ends up trying, she kills her Johns, and from there it was like, it was really like Terminator, actually, was the first genre film, I think.
Did you see it in the theater or on VHS?
I saw it on VHS.
Right.
Rented it from a 7-Eleven down near Leg and Boot Square, which for Vancouverites might know that section of town. It's near the seawall.
Right.
I was visiting Vancouver. I lived in Calgary at the time, but my dad lived here. And and that was back when 7-Eleven used to have like video rentals.
Oh, that's right. They did for a while there.
Yeah.
That's where the money was, guys.
This was the 80s.
Any kind of, but not just them, but like corner stores, like corner mm-hmm. grocery
every,
stores.
Every corner store had like a video rental. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was the first era too, where someone who was a young man could see, you know, Terminator, of course, is not a grindhouse movie, but that kind of, you know, a movie that's rated, say, X for violence or something. Like we were talking the other week about Evil Dead, which was rated X for violence. Like you could not go to see that kind of movie as a young, but with the advent of VHS tapes,
right.
everyone can see everything.
Yeah.
And now a whole new world is open to you. And, you know.
I was at a somebody else's house, and they had like a...
That's where
like
you always see it.
They had a teenage son, and he was like, let's go rent a movie from the 7-Eleven. And I was like, oh, I don't know. This looks pretty adult, and you know, because we're just kids.
Now, were his parents cool? Is that why?
I don't know.
They not care? Or is that
but
the same thing?
But he had seen Terminator many times, and he was like saying the lines along with him, like, Uzi, 9mm. He was doing like all the Arnold lines. And wow. I was like, wow, this guy's cool. He was a couple years older than me, and mm-hmm. I only saw him that one time.
He was
time.
Showing off. That's why he rented Terminator. He's
yeah.
like, this is the one film I know every line to.
And now let's watch Sound of Music. I knew every little one. Yeah. I'm Gretel.
I'm going to blow Robin's mind.
Yep, yeah, and then from there it was just, you know, graduating on to, you know, various, you know, from sci-fi films to horror films to exploitation films and drive-in movies. And
now, where would you find the exploitation movies when you were younger? How did you
again, it's the video stores.
Okay.
Yeah. And even though I didn't I actually didn't have my own VCR when I was that age. I had we were pretty poor. I had a black and white portable TV in my room, and that was the only TV in the house. Mm-hmm. And on weekends, what I would do is I had sleepovers at friends' house. I had a video store membership, even though I didn't have a VCR. And I would go and rent movies, and then like bring a bag of chips, and then we'd have a sleepover at someone's house who had a VCR.
Yeah.
So that was early on. That was, and then we'd sneak out at night. Or sometimes we'd get our sleeping bags and set them in a tent in the yard. And then we'd sneak out at night and I'd pretend like we were on Miami Vice. But Miami Vice is factoring in
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, wow, okay.
And then at like, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning, and then we'd go down and try to find prostitutes and try to befriend them because we were on Miami Vice, of course. And so we were like, hey, we're bringing you in. And we didn't...
Boy, oh boy!
Well, I didn't actually say we're bringing you into them.
Right,
this was all in my fantasy world, but just the idea that you were out at night where there were prostitutes.
Right,
that was just
that's great for them too. Like one, okay, like first of all, being prostitutes in the 80s, fantastic. Number two, kids are coming up to you. That's great. You know, this is going to really get me in trouble. Three, they're pretending to be cops.
Well, also
kid cops.
Yeah, and
It's the reverse Jump Street.
I remember a few of them telling me to go home. And,
yeah, as they should.
Yeah. What are you here? You here spending your lunch money and stuff like that? Like, yeah.
Wow, that's more precocious than I was. I steered clear of those areas, being shy.
Yeah, as a teenager, sensible. I remember once me and a friend thought it was a good idea. This is so stupid. I've got no idea why. We're at a party. And we were in a party, like, getting around the Davie area, whatever. And then we went, you know what? We really feel bad for the prostitutes out there. We're going to give them balloons.
Really? Really?
For God's sake,
I should have brought balloons along.
Why would I think that's a good idea? But we both went, Yeah, it'd be respectful. We'd be respectful. We'd be treating them like people. We're going to just do something nice. We're going to give them balloons. We're not going to expect anything.
You are such a sweetheart.
Right, but then as we walked around later on, we saw they were all kind of gone, and the balloons were tied to various poles and whatever. Went so sad. They didn't take their balloon. Of course they didn't take their fucking balloon. Not, oh, my God.
Not condescending at all.
It was good intentions. It really was the best of intentions, mm-hmm, with the dumbest of experience and not understanding anything. Oh, so dumb. So were you ever into those kind of movies when you were a young man? Or what was your scene?
No, I went through a real snobby phase as a teenager. Like I was like, you had to drag me to Die Hard because I was like, those films are no good. That's an action movie. That is for yokels.
Oh, mm-hmm. So and the opposite of me.
Yeah, I was Mr. like watching Ingmar Bergman films and stuff like that.
As a 13-year-old.
Yeah, Woody Allen and things. You know, I just wanted to be like more.
And then you go out to see prostitutes.
Yes.
You pretend to be little Woody Allen. It's so weird to be around you.
I would like to.
As Sartre said,
my analyst told me to come down here. I wanted to be smarter than everyone else, so I felt like that was the route to that, was to watch these kind of smarty pants films and things. It took me a while to like lower my tastes back down to something more acceptable.
And yet you were the one who turned me on to, again, like The Evil Dead, mm-hmm, and that kind of thing. So yeah. Where did you see those kind of films?
Well, Evil Dead I saw with David M, former friend of the show.
Okay.
And he, you know, his tastes are way more Catholic in films than mine are.
More Catholic.
Just more universal, if you want to use that word. How's that? More universal.
Yeah, that makes more sense than more Catholic. As a Catholic.
That's what Catholic means.
As a Catholic. Okay, but I'm Catholic.
Catholic means universal.
And it wasn't very universal.
That's
like,
what
there
it
was
means.
Nothing in the Catholic Church that went, that's let's watch you, Evil Dead.
That's why they chose that word. They're like, hey, we're the universal church, guys.
They would put us together and make us have makeout parties. That was weird. But please continue.
That's not what I meant his tastes were. But no, yeah, so. But I'm still drawn to films that have a certain, whether it's a quasi-intellectual element or, you know, like I love Whit Stillman films because everyone speaks like real smart people. And I enjoy listening to their conversations about, you know, Fourierism or sales or, you know, whatever. Like, I just enjoy this sort of...
Fourierism?
Fourierism. It's in Metropolitan. He was a,
never even a heard of that.
19th century socialist who started a communal farm in upstate New York that failed badly. Because people don't really want to share things with each other.
Oh.
That's everyone's experiences of trying to live a sharing life. As it turns out, I don't want to share with you. I'm leaving. But yeah, it was a farm that was started there. But in the film, someone argues with him that it was a failure. And he says, granted, it ceased to exist, but I don't see that as a failure. I'm going to cease to exist, but I don't see myself as a failure. Just stuff like that, like those sort of conversations. I really enjoyed that, you know, because you're like, well, this is like how university students should talk. I never met one who did.
Mm.
All the university students I met at university were dull, but at least, you know, this movie gave you this idea.
So
that
we both lived in a fantasy world.
Exactly, yeah.
Mine was just more street level.
Yours is street level. You're going looking for prostitutes. I was trying to find people. I was trying to find preppies.
Mm.
Prostitutes versus preppies. I don't know which is worse.
I do.
Yeah, me too as well. But hey, audience, you decide.
You decide. I'm not going to judge. But yeah, so it took me a while. I mean, I think I got the Psychotronic video guide, mm, that, which is kind of the Bible of
it is,
of
yeah,
of that time,
especially
which the
that
Bible
era, yeah,
yeah. And once I got that, I kind of started to search out those sort of films. So, you know, and that was just total fluke if you could find them, because this is pre-internet.
Now, what would the Psychotronic video guide cover? What would be the genres that would be in there? Would it be like exploitation films?
Exploitation films, yeah.
Very much, yeah, genre films. Mostly of the vintage ones, the
yeah,
60s, yeah, even back to the 50s and the 60s, 70s, okay, and stuff, yeah.
Because you kind of, yeah, you kind of come around in a weird way, right? Like, I mean, I read the 50 worst films of all time. And then you read that and you're kind of like, well, this is kind of funny. And these films are sort of interesting.
You mean those Golden Turkey Awards?
Yeah,
and those,
yeah. The first one was the 50 worst films. And then I read the Golden Turkey.
I have that book. It's so full of weird errors and stuff. Yeah,
is it really?
Yeah, I don't there's a bunch of stuff in
I
there.
I was too young to know the errors, right? I just read it as a teenager.
Like, they've got one of the worst films of all time is Trouble Man, which is not even one of the worst blaxploitation films of all time, yeah, much less one of the worst.
It's
kind of
great,
films,
isn't it?
It's
Marvin,
yeah,
Gaye.
It's actually
it's
like
Marvin Gaye's
one of the greatest soundtracks,
yeah,
of all time.
Yeah.
It's almost like they just picked some of the stuff like out of a hat. Like,
yeah,
mm-hmm, oh, this looks like it might be the worst.
Well, I feel that way too. Like, in the 50 worst films of all time, one of the films they chose is Last Year at Marienbad.
Yeah, really,
the
Rene choices
film, which is a,
yeah,
really interesting movie.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously, it's not for everyone. Like, it's a real puzzle, and you won't know what's happening. But you know, that's, you know,
yeah,
but it's really beautiful. puzzle that you're watching, you know. And I tried to watch it last night, and I was really tired, and I fell asleep 10 minutes in. But I'm going to watch it tomorrow or Saturday morning. That's my plan.
Of course, the idea of bad is relative, but I think within the context of bad movies, a lot of the things that they picked in that film, just nobody would go, that's not a bad
movie. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's more, I think they were trying to find, in 50 Worst Films, they're trying to choose movies they didn't like from all kinds of weird.
Yeah.
I mean, like, strange things like, okay, what's the worst foreign film?
Yeah.
What's the worst horror movie? What's the worst, you know, exploitation? So, you know, it's like Blackula.
Also, keep in mind, one of the authors of the book, Michael Medved, I think he was 18 years old when he wrote it. So.
Yeah, he wrote Golden Turkey, but he didn't write the 50 worst films of all time. Michael Medved didn't write that. His brother, Harry Medved, and another author wrote that one.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
And this is the Michael Medved that's the Michael Medved.
Of today, yeah. I mean, at this time, he didn't seem to have some weird evangelical... whatever the word is.
Or do that weird, remember like when he had the show with Jeremy Irons?
Jeremy Irons, that's right.
Yeah,
Jeremy Irons.
Then they replaced him with the other guy. Who's the guy that would give a thumbs up to
Lyons,
everything?
Jeffrey Lyons,
who would lay like, this is fantastic. Did you even see it? Maybe I didn't. But I remember like the thing
don't
that,
quote me on that
they used to do on that show, which was the ripoff of the, you know, Siskel and Ebert. In fact, I think they were the new sneak previews. I think that's what they did.
Two pinkies up.
But like Jeffrey would do, like say he'd get a zinger in, right? Yeah. He'd be like, this film's a this. Well, it's really a this. And they're like, everyone have a good laugh. And Michael would then screw up a line and go, we got to do it again. And then Michael would take his line.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It would just like jump on it. Because Michael was kind of in charge of things.
Yeah.
So yeah, after it all blew over, there were some complaints about his behavior. And I was like, wow, that guy seems like a right jerk. And then over time, he seemed like a
really
right
proved
jerk.
It. Yeah. He kind of took on that sort of moral majority evangelical, you know, real heavy fundamental thing. But at that time, in the time he wrote Golden Turkey Awards, it just seemed like he was enjoying bad films. My problem with bad films is that they're bad.
Mm.
You know, so when you watch a bad film, you're kind of, your reaction isn't, this is hilarious. It's more like, this is boring. You know?
Well, that's a lot of people, when I think they confuse what bad, good, bad.
Yeah.
Like, I think a really bad movie is literally, like you say, one that's boring.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of these films that are considered like the worst films of all time, they're actually quite entertaining.
Because they're so inept.
They're so bonkers.
Yeah. Like
they're so,
that's more fun. If it's bonkers, exactly.
They
fun.
Get a reaction. Yeah. Because they used to show on, I think like Channel 13, it was like, and now it's the double feature stinkers. And it would be, you know, Billy the Kid versus Dracula or whatever. And you'd go, well, I don't know what the novelty here is. Like, if I was watching this with a room full of people and we're all making fun of it, good times.
That'd be okay.
But alone.
By yourself.
Bring back the baby blue movies, guys. This ain't working for me.
And the thing was, when you read Golden Turkey Awards, is it made it really funny. It made Robot Monster seem really funny.
Mm.
I mean, you watch it and you're like, well, besides the good-looking woman in this movie, there's really nothing going on. Like, there's nothing in this film for me to enjoy.
There's the great aesthetic of the costume of the robot monster.
I don't know if that's an aesthetic. I mean, it's sort of amusing, but then once you laugh
really,
at it,
I mean, I know it's an extremely iconic image in terms of cult film fandom.
I guess that's
they always see the gorilla suit with the
diving
the
helmet.
The fish.
It's a diving helmet, isn't it?
It looks like a giant fish bowl.
And then
though.
they put a mannequin head inside.
Is it a gorilla with like a space?
It's a gorilla body.
Yeah.
With a deep sea diving costume.
Wait, and there's
that,
a skull inside?
There's a skull inside.
Oh, I like a skull inside a diving helmet.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And a gorilla. Gorilla's scary too. It's all the things that scare
you. It's not quite as appealing to me as 50s woman in bathing suit, but you know, that's my what I take from the film, so that's okay.
Right,
you know,
right.
I have a different
taste. But I do admit it's a hard slog to get through.
It is a hard slog. I mean, and I mean nowadays we like, you know, it's been just wiped out by something that's, I guess, more efficient, but going to say the East Van Cinema or going to the Ridge was a good way to see films that were kind of obscure or ones you couldn't see all the time. You know, that's where I saw El Topo was going to, and I didn't even know what El Topo was. I went to see The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and for some reason they chose to have a double bill of El Topo, which is an Alexander Jodorowsky film, which is bonkers.
You know, it's funny. I saw El Topo across the street, like right from, like I can point out the window
at the Savoy.
Well, it was actually the Fox at the time.
Oh, okay,
but they did a thing. Kayla Janice from she worked at Black Dog at the time. She set up a thing called Criminal Cinema. So it was the porn theater during the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then at night on the weekends, this lasted maybe 3 or 4 months, they would show
it's probably
midnight
uncomfortable
film.
Atmosphere.
Yeah, well, that's why nobody came, was because nobody wanted to sit in the cummy seats, right?
See, but
because it was a porn theater. Like,
I saw Polyester and Dangerous Living there when it was a Savoy.
Right.
I also saw The Song Remains the Same. which I fell asleep.
I actually wrote an article about the history of the Savoy for Cinema Missouri.
Yeah. Because I remember coming down here, this is what we're talking about, actually. I mean, this sounds weird because we're talking here, but where we're recording the show, you used to have a kind of a repertory movie theater across the street.
Yeah, we're at Main and Broadway, basically, in Vancouver.
Kingsway, in sort of wedge area. And then there was Drums Only was on the wedged corner where the coffee shop is now.
Yeah, I call this the wedge building.
Some people do too.
Have you guys covered the fact that how much talent there is in this building on this show?
You know what? There's a bit of me that is scared to say that.
Yeah.
Because occasionally someone breaks in a really weird way. Like they try to like claw through the walls because the walls are weak. So they will like scrape through a wall to get to another thing. So there's a bit of me that doesn't want to reveal how much stuff is in this building. Well, but I know once it has to be destroyed, it's going to be, the history of this place.
Yeah.
But just in terms of how many talented other people there are in here. Because it's all studio space up here on the second floor.
Now.
And there's so many amazing, talented, like Johnny Christmas is drawing Margaret Atwood's new graphic novel down the hall.
We got James Lloyd over there. We got Robin Bouget's over there.
Robin Bouget's over there.
That's right. Torrin Atkinson was here for a while. Like Robin Costabaris was here. It's just an amazing amount.
Simon Roy's drawing a comic for the Island series through Image right now. Mm-hmm. And he's there.
Is Simon Roy? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So sometimes
Brandon Graham walks by the building. We go, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I saw him walking by.
He goes, I'm not coming in. It's like, fair enough. But
it's kind of an amazing building, just in terms of how many, like, it's just like a hotbed of creativity.
And I don't want
to. Well, that's why it's soon going to end. Because you're reaching that boiling point where it suddenly becomes very interesting. And then whatever is interesting, everyone wants to glom onto. And then
I think why it's going to end is the giant condos that are being built on the corner.
That's what I mean, though.
The last time they tried to build something, I'm going to point to giant cracks in the wall and show you that the last time they tried to build something, which was the community center next door, the building just went, no, crackety crack. And one of the bathrooms kind of almost fell through the floor.
Okay.
And we couldn't use one of the stalls for, 5 years.
Wow.
So it's that kind of business. Don't use the urinal anymore.
Were they putting pilings in for the...
I don't know. They were doing some work and this building just shook and cocoon, which means great stuff when the earthquake hits.
It's a...
Interesting.
It's a very sensitive building.
It is a very delicate, sensitive building. When Pia and I first moved into this building, we were basically like, there was Chris Brayshaw has an art studio, not an art studio, but an art gallery in the building.
Okay.
And he was like the only kind of artsy guy in here when we first came in. 12 years ago, maybe. But we saw this building on W5.
What?
Because there was some big scandal, like huge scandal, and they were using the mailboxes downstairs to run this huge scam.
Okay.
And so I saw the guy who runs the building, and it's like a shot of him. It's across the street, and there's like the W5 reporter giving him the hard business. And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. And later I mentioned that to him. I saw you on W5. I was on what? And he had no idea he was on W5. But right next to us was...
He said, who, what, where, when?
Yeah, but there's a whole bunch of shiftiness in this building. The office we're in now was a photo
What is the
studio.
Fifth W?
Photo studio. We'll get to it.
Okay.
Photo studio. Wink. next to us was all phones.
Wow.
And people working phones.
Oh.
And people wandering in and something. Something with phones. It's all... Basically, once we started artsifying...
Was that
building,
one of the locations of the Canadian tax... Canada tax or Canada revenue? Phoning people for money... They're owing money and they had to pay them. Otherwise, the police were going to come and arrest them. And
oh, is this your scam?
That's the scam.
That was many years later, yes. Okay. No, this was a different...
It was your scam.
There was a lot of
not
stuff
my scam.
Going on.
I was,
you
I
had
attempted,
a scam?
Attempted scam on me. No,
yeah.
No,
oh, a scam on
but
you.
But once the artists
I thought you were organizing
in,
a scam.
They were very happy, the artists, because we pay the rent generally on time.
Yeah.
We're quiet. We keep to ourselves. No nonsense. So they're delighted that artsy fartsies are in here now.
I'm delighted.
Yeah, but you're
happy. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm kind of a new resident. I've been here for like 2 or 3 months now.
Oh, welcome. Sorry we didn't give you any housewarming.
Did you go through the hazing? This is the hazing actually doing the show.
You're talking about when they shoot the chocolate sauce between your ass cheeks and then hit you with a board?
Yes, and then take pictures.
Well, I said no initially. Then you warm up to it because the chocolate smells wonderful.
Yeah. Well, first we gave you milk chocolate and you went dark or nothing. It'll be dark soon enough.
It's warm chocolate as well. You're right.
It feels nice.
It's very nice. I just want one question before we move on. What are we
moving on to?
What is the
this is it, brother.
What is the fifth?
We're burning like this for another 50 minutes.
What is the fifth W? Who, what, W5. When, where?
Okay, why?
Who, what, oh,
who,
why.
What,
there you
when,
go.
Where, why.
Thank you.
And
I'm thinking
whatever.
How.
Whatever. Nowadays, am I right, kids, today?
Whatevs.
Internet.
Whatevs.
Yeah. We had to go and find our weird movies. I had to go to the paradise and sit and watch a movie. And then all of a sudden a bunch of porno clips would show up in the middle and we'd feel uncomfortable because we're sitting with our friends. I don't even remember what the movie was we went to see.
Well, we went to see, it was a
festival. It was the Paradise on
Gramble? Yeah.
It was a festival of commercials.
That's it.
Oh. And commercials around the world.
As a breather, as a palate cleanser,
yes.
There was about five hardcore porno.
It was trailers.
But trailers that just show you everything.
Yeah. That never happened to me when I was at the Paris.
You know, it was like, it's the special birthday, but you're going to get extra icing on the cake. But squirt. Like, what are you? First of all, spoilers. And two, okay, sure. It's weird. We all feel a little strange. Bunch of nerds sitting there watching our commercial trailer.
I enjoyed it. That doesn't make me nervous. Makes me happy.
Makes my pants happy.
Yeah, makes me all happy.
I don't want to talk down porn in front of you. I'm sorry, but it was a surprise.
Surprising. Yes, it was. Yeah. It did come as an eye opener. What? They're showing all this? Okay.
But that's back when showing and rotate. They would show like the, I don't know if it was X-rated, but Alice in Wonderland and those kind of things.
Right.
They'd show films like that there, you know, on a regular basis. I don't even know what that was going on, but it was before it became then the Paradise, which would show three movies for $2.75.
That's when I was there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I went like all the time because... Why wouldn't you? I'll sit through even a movie I don't want to see. It's like three movies for $2.75.
I couldn't sit that long. Mm. I tried it, but I couldn't do it.
Get up. Walk around. Do some push-ups.
I did. I left.
Fair enough. Then come back. You got a ticket. Go do something for an hour and a half and come back and see the third movie.
I guess you could do that. So this is a question about... I just want to kind of move on to... Since we got to porn.
Mm.
It's a question that actually came up at work today. So I made a joke about...
Because you work in the porn industry.
I work in the porn industry. I just made a joke about pizza delivery.
Yes.
And someone said, when did that become the kind of go-to stereotype of porn?
I would love to know that myself, because that's something that everybody always brings up.
Yeah.
It's like there's several cliches that people who don't really know much about porn always mention.
Yeah.
One is the fluffer. Okay. The pizza delivery guy is another one.
The fluffer is someone who gives blowjobs to help the males maintain their erection.
Yes. It's one of those urban legends that has so
it doesn't actually
it has so little to do with actually the history of I actually did an article, like I did a bunch of research on the where did the fluffer come from?
Their actual job was keeping the pubic hair manicured.
Right. It was the 70s. They didn't care about that.
There's so few actual documented cases of a porn producer hiring a fluffer, because generally they're extremely cheap. Pornographers are famous for not wanting to spend any money on anything.
Okay.
So I don't know how this urban legend got started, because it's like they're not spending any extra money to hire a girl to keep the gentleman erect off camera.
They couldn't be bothered to have a script. Why would they be?
Well, what I never understood about it was you've already got someone there who's on the clock.
Yeah.
That's whose job is to do the things you're talking about.
Right.
Shouldn't they, since you're on the clock anyway,
right,
just keep that. Keep it going,
they're
right?
The talent.
But the pizza delivery guy thing, I would love to know myself where that came from, because you don't see it really.
You never see it.
Yeah, it's
okay. Well, could I make a suggestion of what it would be?
Okay.
Which is one, you want, what's the cheapest place to shoot? Either a hotel or, but even cheaper, someone's apartment.
Right.
Okay. So why is the new
you don't see that. Like if you watch films from that time period, you don't see that setup though.
That's but here's the thing. Yeah. You've got to have a new character come in who this person hasn't seen, because if they already know each other, what's sexy about that?
Yeah.
That's a relationship. Boo. That's true. Why'd this person show up? The plumber, maybe.
Yeah.
But now we got a dirty toilet, and why don't they fix that? That's making me not happy. What's a reason they showed up? Chinese food? Well, now I feel like you're being racist. I don't want to see that nonsense. A little from column A, a little from column B. What do you got? Italian. Well, Italian guys seem like they're horny all the time, right?
You hit on something there in terms of how to introduce a new character for the main character to have sex with. So that probably has a lot to do with it. Although in watching a lot of 70s and 80s porn, it's very rarely a pizza delivery guy. It's often a handyman. The plumber one does actually come up quite a bit. And a lot of times I've seen...
Because they're laying pipe.
Right. But pizza.
The burglar one is really popular.
Someone's, I like the burglar
one. Someone's burgling and then they, you know, a woman's like, oh, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have seen the burglar quite a bit.
Yeah.
You could have the hamburglar and actually then you involve food as well. No, but I think like the pizza would also work because at some point you're probably going to have to pay the crew. Now your prop is also actual food.
Yeah.
Like the stars can't eat nothing because, you know, you're going to wreck your breath and you've got to keep
everything
your
you're saying makes sense except for the fact that you do not see it.
Yeah,
in the films.
See what?
A pizza delivery guy. You never see that.
And even more rare is the penis coming up through the center of the pizza. That seems to be another urban legend.
I've never heard that one.
Oh,
before.
That's yeah. You always see people like they're like, oh, look, his penis and then penis in the pizza.
And we are an explicit podcast, so feel free. And folks, Warner affiliates, we're going to be going pornographic shortly.
Shortly?
Here's what I do. Yeah, one, I wouldn't understand that because you've got to like make that happen in the hallway. And that's a lot of work, right? Because you got to prep it.
Yeah,
you have to come in. And what if you got the wrong door? And, you know, there's a lot of things go wrong.
Yeah.
But what I've always like never understood when I seen it in a movie as well is the idea of like you hollow out the bottom of the popcorn container.
Yeah, well, that's
in
Diner.
You reach in
that's,
for that.
That's the other one.
It's in Diner. That's
right. What, do you got a knife with you? You're cutting a perfect hole? How's that? Popcorn's going to be falling all over your lap.
Yeah.
That's hot butter. There's so many things. There's so many things that are wrong with this. You
it's
got
true.
Now you got salt rubbing against you. That's going to hurt.
It's the idea that the woman, the victim of your little scam, is going to reach in and go, what's this? Why, it's a penis. I am suddenly very interested in this. I am now going to manipulate this penis. Like, that's not going to be a reaction. It's going to be scream and run from this wrinkled worm-like,
even just
butter-covered...
practicality. There's so much that you've got to do. You got to wait until you get to there. And that's many handfuls of popcorn.
Listen,
and you yourself, brother...
Those popcorn bags are big.
Yeah, you've got to start working that popcorn yourself just so you're getting to
true.
It. Now you're eating penis popcorn yourself. No.
I wouldn't mind eating popcorn that was on my own penis.
I'd be okay.
Yeah.
Be okay with that?
Yeah.
Well,
you know
I'm
where
sorry,
it's been.
The Fox
I know
Theater
where it's
is
been.
Closed.
Yeah. I know where my penis has been.
Yeah. Did the Fox Theater have popcorn? You wrote the history. Did they have popcorn over there?
You were the history of
Savoy.
Oh,
you're Savoy. I apologize.
Yeah, Savoy Theater. Yeah.
You have written about the Fox.
I've written about both.
Okay.
Yeah, they did have popcorn.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good.
But they were mostly like a candy.
You buttered it yourself.
Buttered
it.
Hey,
everybody.
Yeah, I just never understand how any of that stuff works. That just seems too much trouble.
What? Oh, all those pranks.
Yeah, all those pranks, and you got to make.
Yes. Once again, I think that falls under urban legend, or yeah, just
the kitten theater, the Venus down further down Main
kitten
Street.
Kitten was on Granville, right?
It was on Granville. Yeah.
The Venus used to have a 99-cent pizza. That was the only porn pizza. That was the only porn theater I ever saw that had pizza.
Mm. So they were actually doing the pizza thing there, but they wouldn't deliver.
They wouldn't deliver.
That's imagine you had to eat it delivered as well. Oh my god!
That's where it came from. Everyone gets confused between Venus and penis. So when they think of Venus pizza, they think, "Oh, penis pizza." Obviously, someone put their penis through the pizza.
We figured it out.
Well, this
finally.
Was what I always
we are through the looking glass here, people.
I wasn't that involved with either of these theaters. But here's what I was basically told about the difference between the two is like the Fox. Well, there's the Fox, and there's like some old guys, and I always see the old guys coming in and out, and whatever. And then they talk about the Venus down the street, and they go, "Oh, brother! Oh, you don't want, oh, brother!
Well, the
oh, brother!" And it would make the Fox look like the good kid in the they're
did.
Both misbehaving teenagers, but Jimmy is way worse.
The Venus,
than
yeah, it was kind of like a level of hell. It was the few times I went there, you really had to take you took your life in your hands. Where's the Fox? You just took your penis in your hands. But
I just think the privacy of your own home is a perfectly fine place.
But that wasn't an option at the time,
well,
really.
I guess they were both straight porn theaters because most of the action happening in both was actually gay.
Mm-hmm.
When I would go to the Fox, there was actually an interesting protocol that I didn't realize until I first started going there, which was like, depending on where you sat in the theater, was basically a signal to the other gentleman whether or not you were there for sex or if you were there to see the movie.
What was the code? Mm-hmm.
If you sat at the front, mm-hmm. that was code for I'm interested in hand jobs or blow jobs.
Okay.
If you sat at the very back, also the same.
Oh.
Yeah. So the back and the
oh,
front.
Oh wait. Okay.
How did you discover this?
All right. Yeah.
Just through trial and error.
Trial and error.
Okay, fair enough.
If you sat in the middle, that was you were less likely. People would still kind of approach you, but and the way they would do it was they would actually sit two or three seats away from you.
Oh, I thought they brought a bag of popcorn.
No, they would sit two or three seats away from you, and then if you moved closer to them, that was a signal to them like, hey, game on. So, but if you didn't move closer to them, then they would be like, oh, okay, he's not interested.
Got it. Yeah.
So I never had any.
So was there a lot of shifting of seats during?
A lot of moving around. Yeah.
Now, do you think that it was okay? Because again, I'm right across from the theater, and all I basically saw was elderly. Like basically, it looked like the 40s. It looked like, you know,
guys in trench coats,
stuff coming out, and like older fellas. Hmm. So what I was figuring on that side of things was, oh, these are fellas that live with their wives. They can't watch a porno because the wife's always home. So you can't watch it there. This is where they come out and they go. Or they don't have a VHS.
Or
they're in like an old folks home somewhere or something like that.
Yeah.
Where there's not an option to have your own privacy and this is where they come. But
don't they know about naughty nurses?
No. Tell us more.
Like the ones you hire?
No, I just meant, you know, if they're porno films, that's a popular thing as nurses.
And you can just hire a naughty nurse?
Any sort of uniform job is very
appealing. If you can't get a VHS tape into your place, you're not going to be able to get a nurse.
Any sort of uniform job is very appealing in porno.
But my assumption was, when you're talking about like, you know, oh, it's the gay stuff, I don't think it is. I think it's just, I'm here. You're on vacation. You know, when in Rome.
Okay.
But I would bet these fellas.
I don't know about that.
I don't think you'd ever see any of these fellas living with another gentleman at any point in their life. But just the act of this is something that while they're watching a porno, is like, fine. You know, it's just like, yeah, you know, I'm here. What's it matter?
It's dark. I don't know if it works that way.
I think it does work that way. I think it really does work that way.
From what you're saying.
And then I bet they'd be probably some of the more homophobic fellas later if you're talking about.
Yes, because
like
from what you're saying, they have homosexual tendencies that they are suppressing, and you know, but only can be released in this very secret way that, you know, in the dark with other men with some sort of weird protocol. That's fine. But outside of that, it's a no-go, you know.
I don't even know. See, I think when you're calling them homosexual tendencies, I don't think it's that. I think it's just like they like the feeling of this one thing. Mm. Who's doing this thing? That person. Okay, who else? That person. That's fine. I like that thing. I don't care who makes me a ham sandwich.
Okay.
It could be Sheila. Could be Steve.
Maybe.
It's
I don't
fine.
Know.
Well, the cool thing about the Fox was it was actually it has historical significance as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was the last porn theater in North America to still be showing 35mm and 16mm prints, whereas the few other ones that were left had switched over to DVD projection. And so up until 2003, they were still showing their own. They had their own collection, and they were all upstairs in the projectionist booth.
Now, did they have a projectionist who knew how to project a?
Mr. Lee. Yeah.
Okay,
and he would run the box office downstairs, and then he would run upstairs and thread the projector, and then run back down and sell tickets. And yeah, so a lot of times you'd come in and there would be nobody at the front. Don't you have to wait? Like, oh. But yeah, no, and he was
just very honest of you.
Yeah, he was a very cagey man. He always looked very suspicious of everybody.
Okay,
I only have one photo of him, and it's him peeking around a corner.
And now Dave has done
embarrassed.
Dave's done a parody of the Scott Baio mural
that
was in the bathroom.
Famous mural.
Now, what was the origin of that?
That
mural?
Actually, back again to Kayla's Criminal Cinema Nights, she actually hired a friend of hers to come and paint that, and that was. I can't remember when this, but this, it was either late 90s or early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of her thing to, she put a bunch of money into cleaning up the theater.
Right.
As basically to, you know, have, wouldn't freak people out so they could come and see the movies.
Mm-hmm. It's too bad it didn't work out.
Yeah.
It's a weird,
it was a beautiful
thing.
Mural. It was
really an
nice.
Interesting mural. Yeah. There's only, I could only find one picture of it on the internet.
Oh, the one that was where it was defaced. Yeah.
Oh, is that what it, I don't know. It was like a New York guy's blog from New York. And I guess he'd taken a picture of this.
It was in the ladies' room.
Yeah. And so I had to reproduce it. I couldn't use that photo. It was just too, it was weird angle, and it was not a very nice picture.
Right.
And it was too small image to use as well. So I had to recreate it using a bathroom in an equestrian center, an outdoor bathroom. I took a picture of it, and then in Photoshop just changed the color of the walls and added the mural to the wall.
She commissioned it because she's a big Scott Baio fan. She's the author House of Psychotic Women, which is a great book that came out through Fab Press. And,
so who's in the men's bathroom? Was it Aaron
there was
Moran?
Just a lot, just a lot of graffiti that says if you want to suck my penis, call this number.
Oh, okay,
a lot of that.
Okay,
and Aaron Moran.
And
yeah, she's actually
she's
in there.
She's just hanging
around.
Yeah,
she's
not
working.
Works work.
I might as well get Steve to make me a ham sandwich. That's what she's saying.
You know, I'm watching the first season of Happy Days right now.
Oh, okay. Here we go. All right. Yeah. It's kind of odd. Man, I'm on board for this. Okay, let's go.
What is kind of weird to me is the older brother.
Yeah.
He seems to be, in the first few episodes, he's there. Yeah. He's a big part of the show.
Yeah. What's his name? Chip Skip? What's his name? Chuck.
Yeah.
That's his name,
and
Chuck.
And then all of a sudden, and then they start alternating where, like, an episode where there's no mention of him at all.
Yeah. Right.
No existence. And I think the Fonz barely shows up in the first episode. He doesn't even have a speaking
role. And
he's in
a windbreaker?
Yeah. He doesn't look.
Yeah.
He's
in a gray windbreaker.
He's not really the Fonz yet. So it almost feels to me like they realized, because the Fonz, like, within a few episodes, it was very clear he was such a charismatic guy.
Yeah.
And did he maybe like take over Chuck's role as the older brother kind of character?
Well, I don't think there was anything for Chuck to do. Like, Chuck was basically another Richie.
Yeah.
And so, they had the famous episode where Chuck went up the stairs and Chuck never came back down the stairs.
Yeah.
So occasionally they'll talk about Chuck being, you know, in the attic. Is Chuck still there? What happened to Chuck? But in the final episode of the show, they do refer to them having, like, another kid.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. That's the only other time they refer to it. Yeah.
Because it's really weird.
It's very weird. And there was I'm trying to remember the character.
But
the one black character on the show, I think his name was Styx.
Styx, yeah.
Yeah, and he had some sort
of... He was a porn actor.
Then he became a porn actor after that, kind of riding on that. That's right. He was there, and then he vanished. Oh, I can talk Happy Days for days.
It's not uncommon. Like, I was thinking of the first season, or the early MASH episodes, where there's this huge cast,
including
characters.
Spear Chucker Jones.
So
long.
But they kind of
first seasons with black characters that they got rid of fast, and then that was the end of that. And they never had another one on the show.
Yeah,
end. Weird.
I mean, that was the same. What was the name? Was in the movie. I guess they just felt. But I mean, it's just interesting because they'll realize which characters work the best and just sort of winnow down the cast to, like, the sort of essential characters.
Yeah.
And just get rid of all the rest because they're not interesting, you know. So just get rid of
those. I feel like those first seasons are like that. They're kind of weeding out what works, what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Who are the popular characters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the first season was shot almost like a film. It wasn't in front of a live audience situation.
It felt more like, what's that TV, that movie?
American Graffiti.
American Graffiti. It totally felt like a TV version.
Well,
did you see
the backdoor pilot for Happy Days, which was Love and the Happy Days?
No.
Okay. On Love American Style, Gary Marsh, with Anson Williams and Ron Howard and Tom Bosley, they did a short. Do you know what Love American Style was? Okay. For our audience, they did like little short things with the topic of love. And so they did like a kind of thing about the 50s, and it was called Love and the Happy Days, and it was all basically like a backdoor pilot for Happy Days. And then, it's shot in the same way. And then the first season of the series was like that. And then the second season on, studio audience, like a stage, three camera shoot, and that became the thing.
You know what I like a lot about more than Happy Days, though, is I've been really getting into Laverne and Shirley, which is a spinoff show. But I don't know what it is. Something about it just really speaks to me. Maybe
it's two women doing physical business.
Yeah.
Like physical. It's like two. You got Lucy and then more Lucy. You got two Lucys going. Not an Ethel in the bunch.
Right.
Two fucking Lucys. And they're just going nuts and they'll swing off a thing.
That show goes
and
down
it's
so
sexy,
smooth.
Too.
It's, yeah, it is. I like
both
of them.
Yeah. They're looking for stuff.
You got more kind of the more tomboy character who's kind of a bit looser, and then you get the more prissy one. But I don't. I can just watch that show like candy, man. I can watch hours of it at a time.
And the dad and Laverne's dad is just nuts. It's nice when you can have one of those dads like, "I'll kill you all. I'll murder you when you sleep." Well, he doesn't say that.
He runs
but basically
the pizza
seems
bowl.
Like he would.
Speaking of pizza, back to pizza again. I want to go to a pizza bowl.
It's called a pizza bowl? That doesn't sound right at all.
It's you bowl and you have pizza.
Oh, pizza bowling. I was thinking it was a bowl of pizza, which sounded terrible.
And here's the other thing about Happy Days. It's Arnold's drive-in.
Yeah.
No one drives in. Everyone eats in.
Yeah, you're right.
No one goes out to serve anybody.
You do.
Where are the roller skating waitresses?
Well,
where are
they? In the first season.
In
the first season, yeah.
Because it's all outdoors.
And then the only time you ever see it again is when Fonzie jumps over the
famous,
cars.
The famous, I thought it was over trash cans.
All right, over trash cans. Let's go with that.
And then a shark.
Much later, and for all that people
jump over a lot of things,
and that was in the sixth season, and for all people complained about, I guess the show jumped the shark. Yeah, it was number one, and then it was number one the next year, and it was number one the next year, and then it was number one the next year. So jump that shark, motherfucker, because it was great. That's a success story. Please continue, David.
Oh, I'd have nothing to say because, to be honest with you guys, I have not seen that show for 40 years. I watched it in its original run, and I've never seen it since then.
It got very strange near the end. It got.
Yeah, I
don't want to
then.
Spoil it for you.
But I was too busy watching Ingmar Bergman at that time.
The Devil's Nephew shows up at one point and is fought by an angel.
And I know Mork shows up as well.
Mork shows up.
I do remember
Mork.
Originally as a dream.
Yeah.
And then as. No, he's real. And then the most surreal thing, sorry, I could talk about Happy Days forever, is Nancy Walker showing up as Blansky, who is, I think, like, he's either the sister or related to Mr. Cunningham in some way.
The director of You Can't Stop the Music?
What?
Nancy Walker.
Oh, sure, yes. Yeah. Okay, but are you familiar with Blansky's Beauties?
Oh, yeah, that was her other show.
That's her other show, but here's how it worked. So she shows up in the 1950s going, how you doing? And it's like, oh, we're related. Let's pretend we're best friends of all time. Yeah, yay. Where are you going? Well, I'm off to Vegas. I'm going to go set up this thing. Okay. Then her show starts the next week. 20 years later.
Wow.
20 years later, she shows up in Vegas with many of the same characters. The guy played Carmine in Laverne and Shirley is there. Scott Baio is there.
I love Carmine.
Not as the same characters, not as the sons of these characters. They're just the same actors. And in both shows, simultaneously, in the same universe. And then at one point, Pinky Tuscadero shows up. Not having aged a day, she's just there. That's how that works. And it's all crackers.
Interesting.
Meanwhile, in the same universe, Robin Williams is an alien giving birth to Jonathan Winters. This is all in the same universe, people. It's all in the same universe.
It's sitcom logic.
Yeah, I don't think there's much of a universe this year.
You don't think there was the happy verse?
I don't think they thought about it that way.
The happy verse.
Because in the happy verse, there's aliens. The devil exists.
Yep. Yeah.
All things are real.
I don't think they thought of it in that kind of coherent way that you're trying to.
No, they went with whatever's popular at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, movies about Satan are popular. Well, Chachi sells a soul to the devil.
It's true. Anton LaVey. I'm actually writing an article about CinemaScore right now about the history of Satanism in pornography.
Oh, okay.
Are they related? I can't believe that pornography and Satanism have something to do with each other.
Well, it's really, frankly, the thing I noticed that
besides San Francisco,
the reason this article needed to be written is there's been a lot written in film fandom about the connection between Satanism and horror films.
Okay.
But around the same time as Satanism was kind of leaking into our horror cinema, it was leaking into our pornography as well.
Yeah.
And it's just something that hasn't been written about a lot.
Hmm.
And it's there. It's and you can trace
when did it peak?
You can trace it back to around 65 is when Anton LaVey started the Church of Satan. In San Francisco.
I remember his ads in Rolling Stone.
Yeah, he made it into the mainstream. He was being covered by all the major papers and Time and Rolling Stone and all this stuff. And people were really fascinated with the idea of Satanism.
Sure. But his was sort of like to call it Satanism, it's kind of sort of a humanism with a different name.
Exactly.
Basically.
But when you take that idea and then you put it into fictional entertainment, you want to add more.
Yes.
You want to add monks.
Make it more spooky.
And people in robes and horns. And then, of course, you know, Rosemary's Baby was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from there on, it snowballs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a good example of a kind of a exploitation film as they started to come up. You know, above ground in that sense, you know, having respectable directors and people working, changing how we look at,
well, I think,
you know,
porn directors were working under the same assumption that horror directors were too, in the idea that they wanted to make something that would freak out the squares.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So that, and keep in mind, at this time, pornography was actually kind of, it was illegal in a lot of parts of America.
Okay.
So
okay.
You were trying to make it something that was dangerous.
It does seem like if you watch interviews, there was a documentary about, like 70s porn stars on Netflix for a while.
Mm.
And when you watch the interview with them, it seemed like basically their attitude was, we were young, we could do this, and it was fun.
Yeah.
Like they didn't have any kind of, I mean, maybe they had the sense of, you know, no one else was doing it. We weren't squares like other people. We were part of this sort of new liberation.
Well, it became kind of hip for a while there, wasn't it?
I think, and,
you know, Tom Snyder talks about going with Barbara Walters and the two of them are going to see Deep Throat
Porno
together.
Porno chic is what they call it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, they tried it at the local theater, the Rio. They did Debbie Does Dallas. And I didn't go myself. I had thought of going, and then I thought better of it. And I talked to someone who went, and they said, well, it was, you know, it's the kind of thing where it's sort of funny for a while, and then it's uncomfortable. Because you're with a bunch of people, and then you don't know what to do, because it's a porno.
But
and
how much of that is just not, the audience not being used to it?
I guess that's part of it, too, but...
Well, and their experience with porn is normally watch it until you're done, which is usually 10 minutes in, right?
Sure.
And so it's like, I got to watch 90 minutes.
But that's the cool thing about vintage porn, though, so, like the 70s and 80s stuff, is there's actually more to it than just inspiration for a wank session. There's other elements.
Yeah.
There's really interesting music, the the clothes are incredible. The hair, well, there's all kinds of, there's
I do like ones.
And they have storylines, right?
What's that one? It's like 8 to 4 or some, it's some sort of variation.
Right. It was a 9 to 5 spoof.
It's a 9 to 5 spoof. And then, yeah. But it has like this song and it's not that bad. Like,
it's a pretty good song.
Like, this is actually a pretty good song. Like, you know, I'm embarrassed to say I'm actually kind of enjoying this knockoff of this 9 to 5 song.
But, yeah. Modern porn doesn't have so much of that. It really does. It's lacking a lot of those elements.
Basically nomadic.
Yeah.
Now
it's just so formula.
Just a guy pumping, grunting, woman going.
They don't have plots.
But why would you? Because you could make, you know, a 10 films at the time. You would make the one quality one.
Exactly.
And you're going to turn your profit. So what are you doing?
And that's the attitude now. And I think, and that's part of it. I mean, not just that directors thought, not just that they're shocking the squares, but oh, maybe they've had this idea that, you know, porn was kind of move like horror into a more mainstream.
Well, that's exactly it. Yeah. A lot of these, this is before porn had a stigma, real stigma against it.
Yeah.
So they didn't know that you couldn't, in the early years, that you couldn't parlay a career as a director in porn into mainstream.
Or an actress or actor.
Exactly. I mean,
Marilyn Chambers, like maybe
those rules weren't set yet.
Yeah.
And nowadays we know, oh, well, that's probably not going to happen. You're going to have this, no one's going to look at you the same ever again and blah, blah, blah. Because we have this kind of sex negative thing happening in North America.
Sure.
It's not so much in Europe, actually. A lot of pornographic actors will be going into the mainstream.
Okay. It's interesting. You're right. And the fact that, there is that stigma, which is weird. And I think also that we have a very negative view of the porn industry in that it's basically exploitation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. These are women who are, you know, drug users, down and out,
a lot
who
of
are
that.
Being
yep.
exploited by, you know, evil people, blah, 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 you know.
And it doesn't help that we have a lot of anti-pornography documentaries. I'm noticing, actually, speaking of Netflix, I'm seeing a lot of them popping up in the last few years.
It's funny, because when it first started, when I first got Netflix, there was a few kind of talking about the industry.
Yeah.
And not in a bad, you know, not in an unpositive or whatever the word is, not in a negative way, you know.
It goes in waves, I notice.
I guess that's it.
Every decade or so, we'll get another wave of anti-pornography rhetoric.
Yeah.
Which, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it's not open to criticism. I'm just noticing a lot of, like...
Well, it should be open to aesthetic criticism.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if it's bad, then if it's not working properly, then, you know...
Well, aesthetic and also the workplace conditions and whatever.
Exactly.
And people are being mistreated. Yeah.
If they are, I mean...
Some have been, yes. That's something you do have to keep an eye on.
I mean, that's the same in any industry.
What I always think
that's
of.
That's true, yes.
It's like... Yeah, Linda Lovelace was beaten up by her boyfriend. Mm. She was abused.
Yeah.
The fact that she worked in porn was almost...
Besides the point.
It'd be like if she worked in a shoe store, would we try to ban shoe stores? It's like,
but what you do get then with that is the person who's working at the shoe store probably will say that they've been hit. And then no one will go, well, what do you think? You're working in a shoe store.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, well, what are you thinking? You're handling feet all day.
You were asking for it.
That's right.
But
you
that's
shoe wench. What
but
are you
that's
thinking?
Bringing judgment to it. You know, that's
well,
not
the judgment is there. That's what I'm saying. It's like that... That's the reason that you don't report the things in those industries that are covered in shame.
No.
Whereas, as you say, in Europe, you can go from the from porn to the mainstream, and everyone's like,
"But the
it's
thing
sex.
Is,
who cares?"
Yeah, but that's on us. It's not on the actress, right? That's our hang up, not hers, right? I mean, if we're putting her in a situation where she can't report abuse because we disagree with what she's doing,
because she'll feel shame,
you know, because she'll feel ashamed, then that's on us. It'd be the same as not listening to prostitutes who've been raped.
Yeah.
And say, well, you're asking for it. You're a prostitute.
Exactly.
What amazes me nowadays, though, and I thought this would change things, I don't think it really has, is that because we all have access to cameras now and everyone shoots themselves and everyone, you know, is filming themselves constantly, you think like, well, why would you need the porn industry anymore? It feels like...
It is dying off, actually.
Is that right?
Because
it feels like this is free, man. There's nothing... People are just shooting themselves all the time.
There's
like,
less people that are able to make a living making and starring in pornography than at any point in history.
Yeah, my feeling... I mean, this was... My guess was like, oh, maybe the quality will have to go up, and they'll have to do something that a person can't do in their own bedroom with a camera and a pizza box.
Right.
Who the hell knows? You know, because
we're not judging.
Well, they're moving out of porn into other areas where it is possible to make money. But even there, it's not. It's a hard road to hoe.
So, like kind of live performances,
like cam girls, for instance, like going on the internet and doing live solo sex shows.
Okay,
where basically people are paying
pay per view kind of ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of girls are moving into that. Mm-hmm. Or stripping or prostitution, but it's just getting harder and harder to be able to.
So that's an unfortunate sideways move, I think, into prostitution, where I think that is an exploit. You are putting yourself into an exploitative place.
Well, and that again,
you have
that's
very little control.
A lot of society's doing as well because it's not. we need to make it so that it's taxed and yeah. and it's a legitimate profession.
Oh, so you're on Chester Brown's side
when you're working under as like a covert mm-hmm. type thing. It becomes criminal elements can come in.
I clearly see, like, if I was to walk four block radius, I would probably pass like at least six massage parlors, which you know what they are. Yeah. What are you talking about? Yeah. There you go. You know, only broken up by sushi restaurants and marijuana dispensaries. So, you know, what high horse are we on now? Sushi, raw fish, cook it or nothing. Am I right, folks? What am I paying for?
They all seem to have a theme to them to me.
So it's like, you know, we're again it, but we're not again it because it's everywhere. So what is it?
It's interesting.
It's amazing to me strip clubs still exist. That's the one thing that I just go, seriously? Not even as a novelty? Like, what is this?
I don't mind strip clubs, but it is. I don't go to get turned on, really.
But it just seems like
I just like the aesthetics of them.
I went. I went as a young man, and I've gone, you know, because of bachelor parties and whatever. And I'm just going, still four songs, and then you're on the rug, huh? Like, there's no twist to it.
I think
maybe
I'm attracted
a second
to
pole, a trampoline. You know, give me something else,
it's
brother.
It's the same reason I was sneaking out to hang out with prostitutes. I'm just attracted to the sleazy element.
Fair enough. Okay, I'm bothered by the lack of originality. I'm like, you can go home and watch anything that you want on your computer. Like, actually, in the strip club, you can look at your phone and see stuff that's so much raunchier than what you're seeing here.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, and it's like, well, what's the appeal of, okay, I'm on the third song. And now it's, you can leave your hat on. We're still doing that, huh?
She's my cherry pie.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Is it nostalgia? But no, it's fine. God bless him if everything.
So speaking of nostalgia, you, Robin, you've done a book of like a collection of porn posters from like the 70s.
It's two volumes of it.
You've done two volumes now.
It's a hardcover and softcover series.
Okay.
It's called Graphic Thrills.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's all about the history of the posters that advertise a lot of American hardcore films, which in a lot of cases, films that had really low budgets actually had beautiful posters. They didn't skimp on the advertising.
Yeah. Because that's where you have to get it out there.
Yeah. You wanted to get people's attention.
Get noticed.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, and this is back when, of course, theaters existed and they couldn't be too dirty because they had to hang in the lobby.
Public view,
or on the sidewalk to try to get people to come in. So a lot of most of them don't even have nudity. It's actually a fairly legitimate art book.
And it's funny. Like, I'm just thinking now, I'm kind of thinking of the Psychotronic Guide, which has no porn in it at all. Because that's not what you wanted to promote. But think of Times Square. There must have been porn theaters. Like, when you watch Taxi Driver.
Absolutely.
He takes Cybill Shepherd to a porn film. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and that's his, because that's where he thinks people go. He has no understanding of what this...
I featured the film that he goes to, Sometimes Sweet Susan, in my book, actually.
Okay, yeah. Okay, interesting. And I haven't seen that one. And it's just...
It's good. It's about a girl who's put in a mental institution.
Oh.
And her doctor ends up finding out that she's not only is she sane, but she's sexy.
That dirty dog. it's an interesting.
Results back. How am I, doctor? Well, I've got good news, and I've got good news.
Yeah,
but then it turns out she's actually crazy. Not to spoiler. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
And then there's weird films like they called her One Eye.
Right.
Or they call her One Eye, which was
with Christina Lindbergh.
Which is this weird film because it's one a true exploitation film in the sense that. Kind of like, I spit in your grave or whatever, woman raped, now it's time for revenge. She goes on this revenge. But it's also intercut with hardcore porn.
It's
been edited into the film. And I don't think it's the same actress. I think it's just...
No, it's a prostitute that he hired.
Okay. And this threw it into the film just on a whim.
Yeah, it doesn't even look like anything. Christina Lindbergh's body, really.
It doesn't even look, but it seems to make no sense in the plot.
Well, I think he was trying to... it's a Swedish director.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was trying to sell the sizzle a little bit.
Okay.
Make it maybe get a little bit more bang for his buck.
Too much sizzle.
Was that done for Caligula as well?
Yes.
It's kind of a similar thing, actually, where after all the mainstream actors, Peter O'Toole, everybody had gone home, Helen Mirren, it was like, oh, well, we've still got this set up. Like, why don't we bring in some of the Penthouse girls and have them have sex?
So what I heard was the
mainstream actors, they went to the premiere and they were like, what the hell?
Yeah.
This isn't the movie I was in.
So this is not what I agreed to.
Yeah, I assumed it was a porno. It's got a guy called Peter O'Toole. That can't be a real name.
I can't even believe I never thought of that.
So it's an interesting kind of combination of not just exploiting a film, sort of exploiting itself, I guess.
Right.
In a sense.
Yeah, well, it's a different time. You wouldn't see that now. Back then, it would you could well, you could get more box office by adding hardcore sex to your movie.
I guess. I mean, we were talking about Evil Dead last week as well, and the fact that they had to include a rape scene in the film in order to market it to drive-ins.
It's a different time.
Yeah, yeah,
that is a really different time.
It is. Yeah. That was like an acceptable. But I think because I Spit on Your Grave was a big hit.
A lot of 70s and 80s exploitation films have like the, oh, it's time for the rape scene. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
kind of funny. And when I watch the film sometimes with modern audiences, they
get very silent.
Out of context, they don't understand. Like, why is this rape scene here? Like, I was really having a good time with this movie, and now there's this, what a bummer.
Yeah,
and I'm like, no, you don't get it. It was a different time.
Yeah. It was weird to think of. Yeah.
we just like, well, where's the rape scene? I'm waiting for my
It's a different time. What time? Time for rape. What? You know.
Yeah, time for change, I think.
And a lot of times the directors seem to like realize, and they would like, oh, no, it's not really rape because she's into it. But then that just adds
even
it
worse.
Weird.
Yeah, that's even weirder. Yeah. Like, anything you do to make that better makes it infinitely worse.
Yeah, yeah.
What if it's a robot? What if it's a tree? Infinitely worse.
Gets creepier.
Yeah.
When Ian and I were walking up the stairs, he mentioned that you have a top 10 list. Is that true? You have a top 10 list of movies?
Well, I was looking on your Tumblr, and you had a list of movies listed of this year. Of movies.
Oh, yeah. I made a top 20 from 2015.
Top 20
from
2015. Top 20. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. Okay. I thought it was a top 10. So what? Well, fuck it then. We can't handle a top 20 list.
We can't have that on the show. So, you can talk about some of them. I don't think I've seen all the best films of the year for whatever reason.
My favorite film of 2015 was Mad Max.
You liked that film?
I really liked it a lot.
I thought it was quite good.
I thought it was incredible.
Did you think it was better than The Road Warrior, though?
I don't know. I think the Road Warrior is still my favorite, but this was like one of the best sequels I've seen in a long time.
It's a very good film. And
sorry to bring it back to what we were just talking about a second ago. Is there a rape in The Road Warrior? Is the family?
Yes.
Is it
part of? Yes.
I'm trying to think if there's one in. I think there's one in Mad Max.
Yes, remember they go off, the woman and the man drive off together and they get
but
captured.
But Road Warrior, was there one? Oh,
I'm pretty sure. Because
it all feels like the death wishy times when Jeff Goldblum would, take your daughter out back and stuff would go on.
That was 70s.
I understand, but we still had that. Yeah. We're doing this kind of revenge film.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, the guy can watch his wife get killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? But if there's a rape involved, well... Now I got to take care of some business.
Okay, just if you think of it, Mel Gibson is sitting and watching in binoculars. He's watching it happen, and he stops looking.
Right.
And so we don't get to see it.
Right.
Thank God.
So it's off screen.
But it does happen. There is a rape in that film.
Okay.
Yes, you're right.
Sorry to throw things
off. What's nice about Mad Max, the Fury Road, is how it takes that and kind of modernizes it in a way that makes it, so it has a female hero in it as well.
It does, but
so
it's actually
protagonist
it's
as well.
Still there. So, it's still there, but it happens before the story.
Right.
So, for instance, they're still sex slaves.
She's pregnant.
Yeah.
She's not pregnant.
No, I'm talking about Furiosa.
It still has that element, but it gets branded kind of a feminist modern feminist film because we see them we don't see that part. We see them taking back their power.
No, it's interesting. What else did you like?
My second favorite film was It Follows.
Okay, I haven't seen that. I keep meaning to watch it. It is on Netflix if people are looking for it.
Yeah,
or it was
I think it's the best American horror film in the last 5 years.
Okay, wow.
And it's really good. Although I'm noticing a lot of backlash in recent months. If you mention that you like the film online, you'll have half a dozen people say, that movie sucks. I can't believe it's so overhyped. But that happens a lot, I notice, when something hyped, then the backlash comes in.
That's happening at work. Every time I mention The Force Awakens, I get a lot of boo.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, or like, I call it the Blair Witch effect. It's like...
I did not like that film.
The first... Okay. Well, you and a lot of people don't. But
when I saw it in the theater,
the first two or
like
three
it.
Weeks, like when it came out, you could not find anybody to say a bad word about that film.
You didn't talk to me. Why did you talk to me?
And today, if you even mention it, like if someone hears you say the word like on the sidewalk, they'll make a point of coming over and tell you how much that movie sucks.
Oh, interesting.
Like, it's like, it's hard to find anybody. They'll be like, I like Blair Witch.
I was very disappointed by that film. And because it was more because Roger Ebert saw it at Sundance and he talked about it on the show.
Yeah.
And he described it. And when I heard it, I was like, this sounds very interesting. Like, this sounds like a really good film. Yeah. Like, wow.
Did you think it was a documentary though at the time, or were you not fooled by that business at all?
No. I wasn't fooled by that.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think like someone seeing it if you did buy
another movie
the
like
premise.
That is Phantom Menace. The first couple of weeks Phantom Menace came out,
yes.
you couldn't hear,
you're right.
nobody said a bad word.
You're right.
And then now it's like, again,
it was a cumulative effect.
Here's what you're going to do. If someone who's saying bad things about Phantom Menace, you're going to go, how are you enjoying your 40s? Are you all right? You know, the 40s working out for you? A little hip problem, Grandpa? How's the old constipation? Got some issues? But if you were a kid when you saw it, it's still awesome.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But most kids' exposure to Star Wars is not...
The first three films.
Yeah. It's not even the first three films.
Yeah.
It's the cartoons. It's the video games. It's everything but. So by the time they actually get to the films, you know...
Well, no, because people at work, their complaint about The Force Awakens was that the lightsaber battles weren't good. Because they were just hammering at each other.
Right.
Because they're not very good. They're not very good. That's why their lightsaber battles aren't very good. Like, if you're going to complain...
She just picked up one for the first time. He just picked up one for the first time.
She picked up one for the first time, and he is a pretend Darth Vader. He's not very good.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the point of the film. Like, everyone's,
he's a teenager.
That's right. Everyone's complaining about the film. They're like, oh, it's so similar to the other ones. It's similar, but it's not. The idea is that they are... a duplicate of something, you know, like they want to be the Empire.
Sure.
They're not. They're a rinky-dink version of the Empire.
Yeah.
He's a rinky-dink version of Darth Vader.
Yeah.
You know,
Neo-Nazis trying to be Hitler, and they're looking stupid with the mustache and the shaved head.
That's the point of the film.
They don't fly.
You know? Yeah.
My third favorite film was Hateful Eight.
Mm-hmm. Really? You like that film a lot?
Really liked it.
Once again, I've not seen that. I did see Ridiculous 6.
I like that one.
And I'm waiting for two more things to happen.
Did you see the full...
70mm? Yeah.
So is that longer?
It's about 15 minutes longer.
Yeah, considerably longer,
Is it 15 minutes longer because of the 13-minute intermission, or is it 15 minutes longer because the film is 15 minutes longer?
Plus, both, yeah.
Wow.
Although I had an extra intermission in mind because the projector broke.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Ours was out of focus in and out, and we got free tickets afterwards.
Locally, a lot of people had problems with
Because there's no real projectors. Projectionists left.
Exactly.
Now.
Yeah.
You know, they all got canned.
It was cool to see it, but there was problems. Yeah.
Don't hate me, but I went to see the second Hobbit film in the theater.
I hate you.
The last 50 minutes of the film, the sound went off.
Oh,
and I had gone to like an 11:30 viewing of the film. So I walk into the theater to complain to someone that there's no sound, and it's empty. It's like the moon, the surface of the moon in this place. There's no one in the you know, where the
So you took a popcorn machine concession. And went
home? Yeah, I should have dragged it out.
And you put your penis in it.
That's right.
No, on the machine. You're doing this wrong.
Popcorn.
Lubrication butter.
I'm looking around like this.
Sorry,
no,
I'm now concession. Thinking because I worked in a movie theater, how we would heat up the golden topping. You did have a sword that you would insert into the gelatinous thing.
Yes.
You could also
literally
insert a sword.
Wow.
Everyone would do by the power of Grayskull. And then we put the sword in, or you do an Excalibur bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And you put the sword in. Whatever sword gags you got, play them.
Sure.
Yeah. But they make the girls do it because the girls were in charge of the popcorn. Boys were in charge of cleaning up the popcorn and throwing out the drunks.
Boom chicka wow.
All right, please continue. So
I'm just wandering and looking for someone, and finally we find the guy hiding in a room, and he comes
hiding.
Out basically
eating a raw fish.
That's
he's
what
a
it
real
felt
fan
like.
Of the
that's
the
what it
jar.
Felt like. And so he goes scurrying out up into his little my precious film
Gollum-esque.
And he says to us, so he goes, I'm gonna have to start because we get the films on a DVD. I'm going to have to start it from the beginning and fast forward it to this point. So we're like, okay, whatever. So we sit there and it starts. And it has the trailers in the beginning of it. Like it's all as a package. It just comes as a disc that they put into a machine and play. That's how much skill it takes to be a projectionist now, right? There's no feeding the film through and no the film breaking and having to quickly splice it. Nothing
cigarette
like that.
Burns.
No skill. No skill. And so, we just had to fast forward it to the point and then start it again. Like, it's ridiculous. So now, trying to show a film like The Hateful Eight in this beautiful 70mm presentation is like, I don't know, because it's what it didn't come on silver disc, you
it's
know?
A it's a whole just... new world. Don't you dare close your eyes.
And then I think like the first time they showed it at the theater over here, just before the ending, they froze it. And then the manager came, you've been watching a DVD.
Oh, God.
And it was saying like...
You were at the 6 o'clock show.
I wasn't at that one. I came we saw it like a couple of days later because that one was sold out.
Yeah.
That one was lined up around the block.
I was at the 2 o'clock. And so I heard about the Saska sisters were at the 6 o'clock.
They lost their minds.
They were so upset.
They lost their minds.
They were really told,
well, we can't give you a refund because you watched the film. Oh, you fucking will give a refund. So by the time we were there and it was going a little bit in and out, they were there with all the refunds. Like, free movie.
Yeah.
Here you guys go.
Yeah,
free movie.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people traveled across the province because it's the only place in like Western Canada showing it in 70mm.
Yeah. There's just no one knows how to do it.
The Esplanade in Vancouver was showing it, or someplace like that in North Van was showing it, and then the park. Yeah.
I don't think so.
I think it was just the park.
It was the only one that had 70mm.
For 70, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought there was two places. I'm sorry, everybody. I apologize.
God damn.
All of you that in the past that went to it, listening to this in the future.
Your fourth film.
Oh, wow. We're going through all 20. Okay, here we go.
Turbo Kid.
Now, what is Turbo Kid?
Turbo Kid is a Canadian-New Zealand co-production shot in Montreal. And it's basically...
Oh, you heard about this.
Yeah, it's like a post-apocalyptic... like if you cross the movie BMX Bandits with Road Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that... It's very much like kids on BMX bikes.
I wish I'd been able to see it, but the Rio showed it and I couldn't make it down.
It's a bit of a comedy, but it's also very gory. So it just hits all those awesome notes
all those
that I love.
All exploitation...
That kind of, the midnight movie. It's just such a good movie. It's really
good. Sounds good. I'll have to...
And it's heartwarming. It's a love story.
Did you see it in the theater or on video?
I got to see it actually in the theater in Montreal at the Fantasia Film Festival.
Oh, wow.
So
nice.
It was really cool to see it with the producer and did a Q&A afterwards.
Okay.
So
his nervous breath behind you didn't...
Please,
this is such a good minute.
Nervous French breath.
French bread?
Well, French breath.
Oh.
See all the French breathers in the Montreal thing.
Yeah. It smells like poutine in there from all the people breathing.
That's a nice smell.
Number five.
What was my number five?
I'm looking up your Tumblr page right now so that we can...
Because I'm starting to forget.
Yeah.
I think my number five was What Happened, Miss Simone, which...
That was very good.
It was a documentary that only
played on
Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, about Nina Simone.
It is a Netflix doc, I think.
And I was happy to see that it got nominated for Best Documentary, too. At the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, man, I was ahead of the game on that one. I called it. I fucking called it.
Well, I read a lot of stories about her before that film.
It's
stories about her leader behavior, which was erratic at best.
Why don't you explain just basically what you're talking about?
Okay, well, Nina Simone is a really famous singer. She started off as a saloon singer or a bar, like a club singer, a nightclub singer.
Like a jazz singer, yeah.
And she kind of morphed in sort of a popular singer in the 60s and then became very involved in the civil rights movement, almost kind of like Dick Gregory, the black comedian, but like basically put her career on hold in order to put her all her energies behind this movement.
She's very principled, yeah.
Yeah, like Dick Gregory was saying, he just, he would give up gigs to go on a march. Like it was, if there's a march, he wasn't working, you know? And she was the same. If there's a march, I'm not singing. I'm going to go to this march. But it seemed like her obsession with it was more than just, the interest in civil rights. It seemed to also have a part of her own kind of breakdown she was going through as well. It seems.
Yeah. She was such a personality in terms of she could be really abrasive and cranky and she wouldn't put on airs. Like if that's the way she felt, that's the way she'd be on stage.
Yeah.
And they talked to her daughter and she's like, yeah, that wasn't an act or anything. That was her. Like she just couldn't be anybody other than herself.
Oh, wow. There's a great version by her of the Beatles song Revolution, where she's basically chastising the Beatles for not understanding what a revolution is.
Oh, nice.
And I don't even know why it's accredited to the, because she basically makes up her own tune to the song. I mean, because it's a pretty common tune. I mean, they're just doing like a blues thing. So, and her version is so different. It's like, why isn't it just her name on it? It's
a fantastic documentary. I'm really impressed actually with a lot of the original content that Netflix has been doing lately. I work in a video store, so I'm not supposed to like Netflix. But I can't help it. They've been really, some of the TV series they've been doing, a lot of the original documentaries and films. It's like, I'm really impressed, actually.
Are you allowed to say where you work? Or do you
I work at Videomatica here in...
That's a great video store.
Which was like the, and I won't say was, is, but it was like the big place to get alternative movies.
We were a rental store up until 2011, and now we're sales only.
That's where I rented my bootleg of Hard Boiled, was from
Videomatica. We used to have a lot of Hong Kong bootlegs.
Yeah, because you couldn't find them anywhere.
I worked there for 5 years in the rental. Store days it was an amazing store in terms of we had the biggest movie collection in Western Canada.
And now it's across the street at Zulu.
We're inside Zulu Records on 4th Avenue.
Unfortunately, has even contracted even more now.
Yeah.
From a kind of two stories down to one.
We have as big a sales selection as we did in the old days. So we just moved the sales store.
Can I ask you one question? Yeah. Sort of store related. When are you guys getting in that Blu-ray Whit Stillman box set? The three.
I don't know.
Let me know.
I'm actually not in charge of ordering.
Let me know when that comes in.
My manager is.
I'll be there.
I'm just a lowly counter staff man.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Now, Dave, because there's 20 things here, and we don't have time for
20.
Yeah,
no, that's fine.
Let me tell you what I'd like to do.
Okay.
I'd like you to name a number between 6 and 20, and then I will say the movie, and then Robin can speak of that movie.
Okay. Well,
that way we're going to go...
Let's go a little past 10. We'll go 11.
You're going to go to 11?
Yeah.
Well, that would be the salt of the earth. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
That's another documentary. It's about a photographer who basically he did a lot of like basically going to different parts of the world and taking pictures of just kind of incredible pictures of people. Okay. In a lot of cases, it was like people working in like in mines. And so just basically the whole idea of just how almost like insect-like human beings can be when they're in like these situations where, but it's kind of an incredible film in terms of, the reason I liked it so much is it's so rare to find a documentary about an artist or a photographer or somebody who works in like a visual medium, but it's not a moving image.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay. And taking that and moving into like a moving image, film, but then still giving the still images room to breathe and like staying, like just being quiet and just letting, it's like, usually it's almost like rapid fire. We gotta make this interesting. And they do such an amazing job in that film of actually really,
slowing down and
letting his work really breathe.
Speak for itself.
I don't want to say too much about it. Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of one of those films that you need to see on your own. But
All right, Dave, you'll be happy with number 8 because that was a film you already talked about.
Okay, well, let's go with 8 then.
It's Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
Oh, so you like that film?
We've already discussed that.
You are on the side of people who like that film.
I liked it. It's not a film that I.
It's not the greatest film of all time.
Yeah, exactly. I have my criticisms, but I was really impressed, and it was great to see in the theater.
It was a good experience. Yeah.
What I liked about it was its practical elements, where it was people dealing with reality, not people walking around in a room of boxes covered with green cloth. You know, and so
I like that.
So she gets onto her speeder and it's there. She's actually getting on it. She's working with it. She's putting stuff into a net on it.
Right.
You know, it's not, you know, it felt real and it had a kind of lived in quality to it, which the other films did not have, you know.
I would have liked more, like when we see Han Solo and Chewbacca show up. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be kind of like, they just kind of look like no time has passed, but other than the fact that they've aged.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen some things like, you know, maybe Han has an eye patch.
Yeah.
Just something. Yeah. Yeah. Felt like a little something.
Yeah. Or something like, he's lived. Some stuff has happened in between these two. I would have liked a little bit more of that, but you know, those are little things. A lot of
Dealing with actors who have, you know, their own egos at stake.
Chewbacca,
as well.
So it's hard. He will not let you shave a patch off of that fuck. I'll tell you about that. It's weird when you see Peter. Is it Peter Mayhew who's Chewbacca?
Peter Mayhew.
Yeah, when you see him walking, he walks like Chewbacca, the guy. Like, you see him at a con.
Yeah.
You're like, you. It's unmistakable because you've seen Chewbacca walk so much that you're just like, is that Chewbacca? First, he's big, but
recognize him by his walk.
You can. I mean, there's other big guys, but when I saw him from the back walking, it was just like, well, it's a Chewbacca walk. That's Chewbacca.
One more thing about Force Awakens. The other defense that I'm having to make to people is, it's a first film, guys. Like, unlike the original Star Wars, this is not intended as a one-shot. It's a film that's part of a continuity.
It's a bit of a setup.
Things that you're seeing now will hopefully pay off in the next films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm interested, the next film is going to be directed by Rian Johnson, who did Brick and Looper. And so I'm interested in what he's going to bring to it. I think I enjoyed Looper and I really enjoyed Brick.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another film that he did, I can't remember the name of it, but I'm just interested what he will, you know, kind of, like, Looper is a futuristic film that has a very gritty feel to it and stuff like that. And so I'm curious what he's
doing. I always get that one confused with this other film, Jumper, was that it?
Like, Jumper, not so good.
It's not good. It came out
around the same time.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Hooper. You keep getting mixed up with.
Yeah.
And then there's Hoosiers.
The Burt Reynolds.
Hoosiers, there's so much. We can just keep going along those lines.
Yeah, I got it mixed up with Hoosiers.
I tried
as well.
Watching A New Hope, the remastered bullshit version with extra shit in it.
Oh, yeah.
We just were screaming at the screen, just like, get that thing out of the way!
Why is it
this garbage? And it looks terrible on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Like, it does not digitally. No. Oh, no, sir.
I'm not a fan of the idea of an artist walking into a gallery and setting up with his paints. And be like, you know, my work's been hanging in the gallery here for 30 years. But you know what? I think I might add a few things to it. You would be arrested.
Yeah.
You would be arrested.
Too late.
Yeah. You can paint a second painting.
You could do a new one.
Yeah. Mona Lisa 2. I'm happy to see her as a robot.
Security would take you out. It doesn't matter if you're the artist that painted it.
Mona Lisa 2.
Well, also you're a ghost, so they would have to get you out of there, you know, for that.
This time it's
personal. All right. We got time for like three more. Talking three more. So, Dave.
We have lots of time.
Do we? Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, he's got.
Wait, are you going somewhere?
He doesn't want to get home to his family. He doesn't love him anymore.
Okay. Family,
yeah, sure you do. Why? Okay. So three.
18.
Oh, well, 18. Oh, well, that's American Horror Story.
What? American Horror Story. As in hooker.
Okay.
I wanted to include a XXX film on my top 20.
Oh, okay.
So I threw that one a bone.
Okay, so that's a recent,
so to speak.
Literally,
it's a recent film.
It's a recent hardcore porn film, which
seems rare.
Yes, yep, and it's a takeoff on American Horror Story.
Okay,
but it's American Horror Story.
I get it. So which one do they take off on?
Yeah, which season are they taking off? Are we in a hotel? Is it a circus? Are they witches? What are they?
It's very loosely based.
Oh, okay, it's like the Wayans Brothers parodies of the films.
Always with these lists, it's always on, it depends on your mood, right? Sure. Maybe if you made the list 2 days later, maybe certain things would be higher on the
list.
Seems
like a lot of backsliding going on here on this old American Horror Story.
The reason I reacted like that one is that it's not a movie, but also I'm not a huge fan of those American Horror Stories because my problem with them is my problem with most horror films, which is that it gets too detailed.
I haven't even seen the series.
And then you aren't scared anymore. Like once you kind of know the backstories to the ghosts,
yeah,
you're why is it scary? He was a doctor.
I just thought it was a porno that had great aesthetics and which you don't see too
that's
often
good.
Anymore.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Now I want you to see the series. I haven't either, but because I don't like scary things that much. But like now I'd like you to see it that you've been spoiled by the porno.
Yeah,
you're right.
See, like,
this might be the best time to see it.
Yeah.
Was there a person like in an all leather suit in the...
No.
Ah, too bad.
I've never watched a full Big Bang Theory. Yeah. I can't take that show. But I have watched the porno version of the Big Bang Theory. Now I think I got the
gist
of it.
What's it called?
I think it's called This Ain't the Big Bang Theory or something. That's the way they do it now. Yeah.
You know, my favorite.
It's not funny names like on Gold and Blonde anymore. We're long
past
those days.
In the old days, the titles were so much better. But
Star Wars.
The spoofs are better now, actually.
Mm-hmm. But the spoofs are better.
We don't have those cool titles. Yeah. My favorite one, actually, is the Big Lebowski. Porno.
Oh, which is called?
Which is called, I think, This Ain't the Big Lebowski.
Oh, okay. Well,
but you can tell the director really loves the Big Lebowski.
Okay.
And he does a really good job of spoofing and bringing in like people who really look like the original characters. And
the Batman ones from the 60s. Holy cow. The costumes are amazing. And I forget the guy. Like, he's a
guy
who...
From the 60s? Porno from the
60s? No. They're doing a porno version of the 60s Batman series.
Okay.
Wearing...
That is a good one.
Very realistic outfits.
Oh.
Like, very dead on.
I'll have to check
and the guy that they've got, and I forget the actor's name, but he's in a lot of pornos, plays the Joker. He's just going to town. Like, he's really...
He is good.
He's good. Yeah. He's doing a good Cesar Romero.
I can't remember his name.
No, but you'd see him and you go like, that guy everything, every Swedish erotica in the world. That guy. Okay.
The only one I've seen is a version of the Blair Witch Trials is a porno of that.
Oh, there's a Blair Witch porno?
Or Blair Witch Project or whatever it's called. Yeah.
I shouldn't be
the
surprised.
The only thing that was interesting about it was they filmed it...
Would it be... of course. I'm going to go with the name.
Sure.
The Bear Witch?
I believe it is. The Bear Witch.
I think you're right.
Thank you very much.
I think you're right. But what was interesting is that it's Blu-ray and it allows you to switch views during the sex scene.
Nice.
So you can have different... viewpoints, if you
because they're shooting
you
with
like.
Alter with extra cameras.
Yeah, yeah,
that is a Blu-ray. Isn't it? All right, got time for two more. What you gonna pick? And then we'll also have to say the porno version of the title.
I'm gonna
immediately
pick,
afterwards.
Pick lucky number 13 then.
Number 13. Okay, that is White God from Sweden.
Okay, forget number 13. I'm gonna go with.
What?
I don't know.
He's anti-white things. He's very
I'm very against white.
Swedish horror movie about a dog.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
What's the porno version of it?
A white load.
White log?
White log.
Ew. All right, either way you want to go. You're thinking it's dog. It's God.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Let's go white goo. Also would work. That would work visually.
White goo. Oh, that's perfect.
That's the best one.
Okay, that's better. All right, so we got time for two more. Go ahead. One more. Right now first?
No. We have time for two more, you said.
I know, but we'll have to do one at a time.
Spending more time... deciding on how much time
most
we have.
Most of our show is fights. That's what this is.
Number...
In later seasons, we'll be like Happy Days. We'll get into a comfortable... But we're uncomfortable
more
at this
cool
point.
Show up.
Yeah, what are we doing with Donnie Most? What's his deal?
Okay,
he's too much like Richie.
Number
Make
10.
Make him a joker later.
Number 10.
Number 10. What We Do in the Shadows. Oh, I like that a lot.
Yeah. Technically, it's a 2014 film, but we didn't get it here in North America really until
I have not
did
seen
you
that.
See that?
No.
It's a comedy about vampires.
Another New Zealand film.
Okay. With Jermaine Clement
Flight of the Concords.
Flight of the Concords.
Okay. It's really funny.
No, he's glad when he's working.
It's a very dark comedy.
The horror is pretty horror.
It's pretty scary.
Like, they go for it. Mm. Yeah, and then you're like, oh!
They took all that expertise and put it into Ash vs. Evil Dead.
I'm so hard to please with comedies, but when I see one that I really like it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's one of those nice ones where you're in about like 7 minutes and you're going like, oh, this is good. Oh, don't blow it. Oh, no, they're not going to blow it. Oh, this is good.
Okay.
Well, where can they go? Good. Oh, they went somewhere good. Okay, good.
I love the werewolves. show up. They're not swear wolves.
That's right. They're not. And I don't want to say who's playing the werewolves, but good casting choice. And when you see them, you're like, oh, this is delightful and I'm happy.
Oh,
and then they go places with it. Yeah. I would say actually look for that film. I think you and your family, who he's trying to avoid by doing this podcast.
No, I'm not trying to avoid
would
them.
All enjoy it. It's an enjoyable
family. I'm trying
family's...
to support them by doing this podcast. It's not working, but I'm trying to support.
All right, Dave.
Number 20. That's going all the way to the bottom.
Number 20. I'll even give you one more after this because you've been good.
It's weird that we're going all around the world on this.
Number 20.
What do they call that in porn when you're going all around the world? What's that?
It's called all around the world. Yeah, around the world.
And I can't find my baby. All right. Most violent year.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
But you like to let it's a kind of a weird character.
Well, it's number 20.
It barely made it into my list.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be super great because it's number 20.
Number 20, I guess you're right.
It's one of those films that I thought cut to like an incredible trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good trailer. And then when I watched it, I was a bit disappointed that it didn't quite live up to the trailer for me.
Okay.
But it's still a really good movie.
It is interesting.
And people should check it out.
And what's the premise behind it?
It takes place in the 70s. It's another one of these 70s crime films.
Yeah. But it's a little different in the sense that the main character played by Oscar Isaac, who's in everything right now.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
He is kind of honest in a way.
Yeah. And he kind of gets involved in
I mean, because he's trying to better himself. In order to do that, he kind of has to align himself with a lot of shady things.
It kind of shows but what it's like to have like a legit job, but then, you know, if you need to get money and going to a non-legit source, and then suddenly you're involved in that world, whether you like it or not.
Whether you like it or not. And it's almost like a character piece. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, you know, you'd stop and start, but with no real sense. Like, it doesn't really climax. Mm-hmm. It just kind of reaches a point in the film. It's like, okay, it's done.
And this is on Netflix right now, too.
But it's
good.
It's a good film.
Yeah.
I think Jessica Chastain is in it, right?
Yeah.
As his wife. And it's very, you know, very good acting and very, very good film.
Another thing that sometimes, like, when you like a movie more if you don't see the twists coming.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if you do see them coming, if they feel a little bit telegraphed, it really kind of hurts your enjoyment of a film.
Okay.
If you're like, I knew how this was going to end way before the ending came.
Okay.
And it's like I'll see a movie and I love it so much and I try to get my wife to see it and she won't love it nearly as much because she saw the ending. And it's like, I don't know what that is. It's just a weird thing about expectation in terms of like...
Yeah. Yeah,
there's all these psychological things that go into movie enjoyment.
I've got a wife who gets the endings seconds in always, constantly.
Yeah,
him. Fuck!
I know. Don't say it out
Damn
loud.
Damn it!
Don't say it out loud for sure. What a spoiler!
That's why he's wearing a hat.
But
shut up.
For instance, like a movie like Old Boy, which I loved so much, the original Korean Old Boy.
You like the remake more.
I did not like the remake more. But I was like, Rebecca, you've got to see this movie. You're going to love it so much.
Yeah.
And she guessed the twist literally 5 minutes into the film. And of course, she didn't enjoy it anywhere near as much as I did.
Yeah. See, I don't watch a film like that. I don't guess the film while I'm watching it. I just watch the film.
You just want to be part of it.
I just want to be part of the film.
Along for the ride.
Yeah, and
me too. I'm the same as you.
I don't think about it all. I'm not like, oh, they should have done that.
But sometimes you can't help it. You figure it out before you're supposed
sometimes
to.
Sometimes that happens.
It hurts.
But my favorite thing, though, is getting it wrong and then going... I have a new idea for a movie because they didn't use it.
That's
a fresh idea.
Your idea's better.
Yeah, my idea, if not necessarily better, but different enough that, okay, this is how you do this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's where
Whereas for me, if it does telegraph so strongly that I see the ending, then it is a bad film because if I'm seeing the ending of the film, then it's really been telegraphed.
I don't think it does. I don't know how she figured that out. It's such an maybe she's just brilliant.
She is kind of brilliant. Let's throw a plug out for her right now.
My wife is Rebecca Dart. She's an animator. She's a comic book artist, and she works on My Little Pony.
Right, and one of her amazing works, which you can still sometimes find in comic stores, is Rabbit Head.
Yeah,
which
check
is
out Rabbit Head.
Absolutely brilliant.
I own it.
It shows up in the Best American Comics 2006 anthology. If you happen to see that,
that's where I own it.
In bookstores.
Harvey Pekar
edited that anthology.
That's
really good. But it's reprinted there in its entirety.
Let me just go off the list for a second.
Okay.
Did Ex Machina make your list?
It did.
Oh, okay.
Dave, why don't you take a guess?
Is it number 7?
Dave. 16.
Really?
That's another one probably would be ranked higher on my list if I rewrote the list. But once you make it, you got to stick with it, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, just
I don't
want to
talk
mood.
About it too much because it is a very good film.
That's another one that really should see fresh.
It's got a sting in the tail.
I was in a bad mood, so I didn't. It's probably one of my least favorite movies of the year. I got so mad at that film at the end. Oh, I just went off on a ramp and everyone's like, it's the greatest. I'm like, I'm sick of British films that fuck you, England.
Well, what I like
is so mad.
I'll just say
to throw a piece of fish and chips in the sewer. So mad.
I'll say two things about it without wanting to spoil it too much. One is that I like movies, or I like fiction that gives us the hard reality of our love of technology, you know, the cold, hard reality of technology.
It does that.
And I like, and I really like Dread. And I,
me too.
And I liked that Alex Garland, who wrote Dread, got to write and direct his own film. And I don't think he, and I think he did a really great job. And so he did not disappoint me, you know. And I'm sorry you didn't like it, Ian.
That's okay.
But I think it is a...
I'm sorry too, Ian.
That's okay.
I think it is a really good film.
You know, this is what makes the world go round, guys.
Okay.
Different strokes, different
I have
folks.
Not... I mean, this year we just... Usually we go to see a lot of films. Like, that's just something I love to do, is go see movies. But we just have not had time this year. And also, I lost my job in the summer, so we haven't. We had a limited budget through the year. So, like, going to see Mad Max was like a big deal for us. Like, it was like, ooh, we're going out, gonna buy popcorn, maybe. You know, so that was like a big deal for us to go see that film. And thank God, it was a really good film that you could really watch and go, wow, that was great.
I've watched it four times already, and it seems to actually weirdly get better.
Wow, that's cool. We do have, my daughter wanted the DVD or the Blu-ray of it, and so we do have that at home.
It's kind of fun to watch it in black and white as well, because that's actually, George Miller mentioned that was actually the way he intended it to be.
Can I throw a film that I liked a lot?
And it works in black and white.
We're only talking about strong feminist role models living in deserts.
Okay, well, this film totally
Awakens and just Mad Max.
This film totally fits that, which was Paddington. The Paddington the Bear film, which actually is a surprisingly good film.
Now, he attacks Leonardo DiCaprio. Is that the plot of this one?
That came out this year.
Yeah. I don't know. Did it? I don't know.
I think Paddington was last year.
Was it last year? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, everybody.
That's okay.
But, you know, you can...
It's on DVD now, so maybe it's available on newish. Blu-ray. Yeah, you're probably right.
What about the film by Canadian... I think it's Canadian director Denis... Enemy with Jake Gyllenhaal. Was that last year or was that this year?
Oh, I don't know.
It seems like it's been on Netflix a long time.
It's not on Netflix.
It was on Netflix.
No, Enemy was not on Netflix. It's still on Movie Channel.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It hasn't made it to Netflix yet.
All right. I've passed by it many times and thought, oh, maybe I'll see.
You should. You should. It's a really good film. Really good film.
Hmm.
One of the better films I've seen in the last little while.
I saw Brooklyn last night, and I liked the character so much. I was like through it going like, oh, something horrible is going to happen because it's a movie. It's a fucking movie. Here we go. Bring on the cancer, you fucks. Bring on the war. Bring on something.
Yeah.
Comes polio. It's coming. And they did okay with it. But I was like, I don't want to see conflict. I like you all so much.
Yeah.
Don't make him a rapist. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Can't it just be like a light, fun film like Hope and Glory or something? Or is this kind of like
a film that you'll watch with your mom and she'll, that's good.
Whereas Enemy is a movie to watch with your mom once in a while.
Yeah. Enemy is fun because it's a real mindfuck.
But it's really enjoyable. It's nice.
It's a real mindfuck. And it takes place in Toronto. And it is Toronto. Like, he goes to Mississauga. But it's all filmed in, like, kind of 70s parts of Toronto. So it has kind of a David Cronenberg feel to it, where it's all, like, concrete buildings. And it's filmed, the cinematographer uses weird kind of orange filter, so everything looks orange or golden in it.
Hmm.
And it's and when the movie's over, you're like, "What the fuck just happened?" Like, I don't know what I was watching. Like, this was weird. Like,
it was an enjoyable experience.
Really good film. Tip. Yeah, yeah, a lot of fun.
Just the tip, Dave.
Just a tip.
Yeah,
that's all you want.
That's the name of Robin's podcast.
That's the name of my new porno.
Do you not have a podcast?
I do have a podcast.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Why didn't you tell us that?
All right.
Why didn't I tell you that?
Yeah. What is your podcast?
That's a secret, boys. No one will know.
What's your podcast?
It's called the Cinema Sewer Podcast.
Oh, okay.
How often does that come out?
Very rarely.
Oh, okay.
All right. I don't feel like
I do about maybe three a year.
All right. Because here's the thing. I know a lot of people have podcasts.
Yeah.
And then I know a lot about their podcasts because they advertise them a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I get a lot of podcasts.
You seem to be keeping yours on the DL.
I'm actually quite proud of it. It's one of these ones where it's more quality over quantity. We put a lot of work into the very few episodes.
Opposite of us. Okay. I understand where you're going. Okay.
No, you guys have
point
both.
Taken.
You guys have both.
Point taken, Robin.
I'm really fond of my podcast, but we do it so rarely that I don't often have...
Now, when you say we, who does it?
My co-host is Tim Hulsizer.
Okay.
And that's the kind of reason I didn't do a podcast for the longest time, because I didn't want to
do the work.
Be saddled with all of the technical work. Yeah. So I'm like, I need to find somebody that's going to do all the hard work, and I can just show up and be charming. Yeah, basically, Tim Hulsizer is my Dave Dendry.
Okay. It's, you know, it's a heavy load, but we can bear it.
Does Tim do an elaborate piece of art for every one of the shows?
No, now that's something I don't think anybody does except for you, Dave.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy idea that I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. But oh well.
You know, I've been
taking it easy
that,
the last little while. I've been taking it real easy. Real easy.
Real easy.
Nah, you've been still nailing it. You've been still doing well with them.
I got one like at my last
porn euphemisms.
I felt like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be looking through
like
your book.
What I don't envy is you having to ape like Robin's style. Like for the next one.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Oh my gosh, so much work. Fun. All that lettering. Oh, so hard.
No, maybe you could do like a spoof of the Deep Throat poster or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll find something. We've talked about a lot of stuff, so yeah, you know, lots of grist for the mill.
Now, anything else you want to plug? You got your podcast. You got a coloring book that's out now.
Yes, I have a brand new coloring, an adult coloring book that's literally for adults.
So, is this drawings that you've done in CinemaSewer that you've repurposing, or all new drawings?
Pretty much all new stuff.
Is it done in the kind of new style of these new coloring books for adults, where it's like a lot of detail?
Well, I did change my style a little bit so that it was like more apropos to be colored.
Yeah,
because I wanted to make something that would look that would be fun to be to be colored.
So you've adopted Hergé's style. Exactly. All clean line.
It's very, very, very pornographic. It's very spread cheeky.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of various types of jism flying everywhere, but which you can color however you like.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Right. And if you color it different colors, it's not jism anymore.
No, it's rainbow goo.
That's right.
It's that silly string.
Isn't that one of the My Little Pony characters?
Rainbow goo.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's called Sugar Spread. People can find it when they have to go to cinemasewer.com, and they can. I have a link to my online store there.
Okay.
And if you're in Vancouver, you can go to RX Comics.
Yes.
And find they've it got there. It on the shelf. I just saw one that was right there.
I think they have it at Pulp Fiction Books as well.
They have it at Rath's Art Supplies as well.
Okay.
Although I believe he keeps it under the counter.
Basically, the only place they've got it is in this one block.
This whole block's got it covered.
It's
here.
Kind of. I love
and
this.
And by the
block.
Way, when you're here, break in and see how all the artists in the Wedge Building.
I love the Wedge Building. So this is my whole world.
Yeah.
I don't have to go.
It is a great building.
Everything I need is right here.
Oh, it's like the way Pia described
it's
was
got a billiards.
In Harry Potter style.
Yeah.
They got the Room of Requirement, which is a room that is like anything that you need.
Yeah.
And that's what it basically became when we moved in here. Was just like, oh, I'm hungry. How about a restaurant below you? Okay, I like comic book store.
Well,
art
books.
Supplies. Arts are over here. My hair's too long. Mini stylists.
Yeah.
I'm tired of those burgers. Taco place behind you. How's that sound?
Yeah.
It's all here.
Yeah, it's everything is here that you'd ever want. And the always like, I always like, I'm fascinated by Mabel's Beauty Salon, which is this beauty salon.
That's where I get my watch fixed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's Mabel's got this beauty. Oh, first of all,
beauty
like the sign is not from the 90s, not from the 80s,
not from the 80s,
not from the 70s,
not from the 70s.
I don't know where it's from, but it's really old.
Okay.
And you look in and go like, nothing has changed.
Yeah.
For some reason. And then there's a man. Who's in the front.
A little Chinese man.
A little Chinese man.
Sure.
Who's there in the front. It doesn't matter that he's Chinese, but he is.
Okay.
And
he also has an eye loop in.
That's right.
You're just giving us a visual picture of what we're seeing.
He looks like he just stepped out of one of the Matrix movies, and he's going to give you a secret.
He's the engineer?
The key master, I would say. Something along those lines. But yeah, he's there, and he's just working on watches.
Yeah.
Working on watches. And when I need watch batteries, I go there. Working on watches.
He's always got a magnifying thing, and he's working with tiny...
A jeweler's loop.
Yeah, and he's just working intently, and then no one is ever getting their hair cut. But I assume that's Mabel in the back, or Mabel's ghost. I don't know.
We don't
it's
know.
It's so weird. It's almost like an aquarium. Like, if she just swam by, I'd not be surprised.
I love my watch so much. I got it off a prostitute friend of mine. A John had left it behind.
It's a digital watch.
It's from 1980.
Yeah,
it's an original Seiko from Japan from 1980. Wow. It's really hard to replace because it's quite old.
Yeah.
And when it stopped working, I was absolutely heartbroken, especially when I went on eBay and tried to find a new one. It was really hard to find one.
Yeah.
I took it into the nice old man from the Matrix.
Yeah.
And he literally had it fixed within... 4.5 minutes,
wow,
5 minutes.
Yeah,
it's like,
that's great.
And I don't know what he did. He took it all apart and maybe blew the dry jism out of it. I don't know, but he does incredible work.
Speaking of blowing the dry jism out, a siren just went by. So everyone out there,
take a drink of your own jism.
Oh, for God's sake! I don't want to end the show like that.
Rainbow goo.
I don't want to end the show.
Drink your own rainbow goo.
Let's throw though a recommendation for if you need to get your watch fixed in Vancouver.
Yes.
Go to Mabel's.
Mabel's.
You'll be able to spot it.
What's it called? Mabel's House of Beauty.
Something like that. But
Mabel's,
it's
Main and Broadway.
It's near. It's near the Guys and Dolls pool. It's been around since the 50s.
Sure.
Clearly. Unironically, this is just a pool hall that's been around since...
That's why it's called Guys and Dolls. It's been around that long.
Yeah, it's not like going, oh, let's old-timey name it. Nope. Just it. That's the name of it.
Sure.
Old school.
It's basically full of Damon Runyon characters.
Yeah, so go do that. I also want to throw a plug out for your Live Journal page, which I was reading your fascinating look at McTacos.
Yes.
I'm just going to say that much.
Okay.
There was a restaurant called McTacos in Vancouver, and you saw it in a picture and went, what was with this? And then you research it.
I get like that. I get obsessive about
it. Oh, it's great. And I was like, oh, I wish someone would. Oh, he looked into it. And like, you really looked into it and broke it down. I was like, what's with McTacos? And
what's
like,
even more amazing is you still have a Live Journal page.
I love Live Journal. Wow. Except the sad thing about social media is it's only as good as the amount of people using it. But I still hang on with my fingernails onto Live Journal.
Yes.
But you can get to my Live Journal page from cinemasewer.com. There's a link there to it.
And we'll,
which also links to your Tumblr page.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, we'll put some links up on our website. What's our website, you might ask? Well, that would be sneakydragon.com.
Why do we call it that?
What's that? Because we are non-ironic.
Oh, that's true.
And
it's good promotion.
We've also got message boards on there. We love to hear from you. Always a treat. We often respond. We always respond. Who's fooling who? We always respond to you.
Often.
We're also on...
People are going to write in and say, I thought Dave was a Christian. That's what they're going to say. The whole thing.
And what? What about that?
My interest in porn.
Well, I think I learned that Catholic means something very different than I thought.
You didn't know
it did.
That?
No.
That's new to me too, Dave.
Really?
Because
in the Nicene Creed, you are, well, whatever, in the Creed you say to the Catholic, you know, the Universal Catholic Church or whatever, but it's small C Catholic, not big C Catholic.
I feel like I learned things here today.
Yep. That's why we're here. We're here to learn and grow.
Does everyone know where skedaddle came from?
Oh, for
I told
sake.
Someone I worked
okay,
today.
Okay, go ahead. Where skedaddle come from?
The Civil War is when people got scared and ran away. They were skedaddling.
Oh, very nice.
So because they were untrained troops, it's very easy to, the morale would drop and everyone would like skedaddle. And
nice.
So it was a way, yeah. There we go. That's where the word came from.
I know the guy that invented the word quinky dink.
I know that because I read the red badge of courage. That's where I learned that.
If you want to talk more about the Red Badge of Courage, our Facebook Stephen page
Crane,
is Sneaky Dragon. Just go and leave us a message on there.
One of the greatest American authors.
Twitter, we're at @sneaky_dragon. And if you want to email us.
What about email? Yeah.
What about email?
Sorry, I was going to ask you, then you said it. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. This is what it's like to be your son.
What about female?
Thanks for having me on, guys.
What about, let me get through this. And then we'll pretend to like each other. Okay. If you want to email us. That's sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. Sneakyd@sneakydragon.com.
Why do we call it that?
All right. Okay. We loved having you here. Thank you for crossing the hallway to coming to Hell Kitty Studios.
Yes.
It was a thrill.
Yeah. It's part of, we're discussing about like getting everyone from that studio over here at some point or another, except for James, just because we're going to like psych him out.
We want to psych him out. We just want him to get really paranoid.
Just to make him feel really weird.
That's right.
Yeah.
Everyone over there, crazy talented. Thank you so much for your kind attention, everyone out there. I've been Ian.
I've been David.
I'm Robin.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Fun. You're such a jerk.
You got it.